very bass.
So, old school. Old school. So you
broke out, the old school stash. Broke out the stash of old school stuff.
I got you want to see old school 1.0? It's a book full of nigger jokes that sells illegal knives and brass knuckles on the back.
Hey, whoa.
That is...
It's in theory. In theory it is. I mean,
on paper.
I heard something like that exists. I've never seen it, nor do I know anybody that has it. Oh, I wonder if having a catalog for that, which, of course, for a defunct company.
Right.
Where you can never order such things and not having such things in your possession at all. I think that it's still just a piece of paper, right?
No, of course. It's history.
They would argue. Well, it contains like images of things. It just like, oh, look, this dude had a picture at a Capitol.
I mean, they're just
illegal.
Have
a Lego set? Does it sell Lego sets?
No,
like that?
What? Dude, what do you think? I'm some kind of fucking terrorist? What
the hell's
dude, wrong?
I don't want to get the feds on you.
Are you insane?
No.
Come on, bro.
I know. A friend of mine's his son. His contact was grayed out on Threemo. I wanted to send him a message, and I was like, "Oh shit, he's on the lam because all his Legos I saw."
Oh Jesus! Had.
Man, he's like, and I told him, I was like, "Yo, your boy, his son is 18 years old." Okay, so just so everyone understands, he's a friend of mine. But I'm like, yo,
an 18 year old with a Lego set.
I'm like, well, no, yeah, well, that's the thing. He's just, you know, he claims. He had gifted them to his younger brother. But I'm like, I just hope the feds believe that, my friend. I hope the feds believe that, my friend. So he's on the lam right now.
So, you know, just quickly, you go to the new National-Justice article, 12 FBI informants, it's now confirmed, 12 FBI informants involved in the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping plot.
Yeah, let's bring that up real quick.
I got the document. See, there was BuzzFeed actually reported on this briefly, but they never published the document. So I have to go and I have to actually buy. I'm going to start asking you niggers for money soon. I'm talking to the audience because this is actually costing me a little bit. But
yeah, dude, we got to get that set up. But
we're going to get that set up because I want to take the hyphen to the next level. But, of course, you have to pay for the public document requests and so on. Because the media never actually posts the documents, even when they report on it.
Yeah, no, you have to find it yourself. So, and that's actually hard to find sometimes.
It's hard to find. And so I go and I get the requests and I publish them so that the public can make up their own mind. See, that's what journalism is. Okay, I have my own editorial line at National Justice. I try to be objective. But there's no question here. 12 FBI informants were involved in this plot, which makes me think, like, real people were in this group?
It seems like none. Wasn't there, like, one homeless guy or something, or is that old news already?
No. The one homeless guy was being gaslit by an FBI informant, and then there was an undercover FBI agent that was helping him. So informants and agents are obviously different. So these are 12 informants. That means that the two or three FBI agents in the plot, so at least 15 people were involved in setting these guys up.
Okay. So are these guys all informants in this picture?
No, they're defendants.
Defendants. These are non-informants.
So they arrested like 10 people or something, but these guys are all defending in the same case.
Right.
And the lawyers for the guy, Caleb Franks.
This guy right in the middle, yeah.
Yeah, they're arguing that he said multiple times that he's not interested in breaking the law. And I feel really sorry for him because he's had a drug problem in the early 2010s. He got cleaned up. He did a little time in jail. He got cleaned up, became a drug counselor, was giving back to his community.
Mm-hmm.
And was helping people. He volunteered a lot and stuff. And he said, he's just like, oh, I was just going to this because I wanted some fresh air and to train. It's not illegal to train with firearms.
No, it's not illegal to do anything.
It's not illegal to train in first aid with firearms with other men. So he was there and he said multiple times to the informant, I don't want to break the law. I'm not cool with any kidnapping. He said this. So why is this guy in jail? Or why is he being charged? Okay? I mean, it's just... They're going to take this to trial. This is one thing. So most of these guys have private lawyers. You know, I'm guessing that some of them have money, but other people maybe are helping them, like in terms of fundraising. I don't know the details, but they have private lawyers, and the lawyers are doing a damn good job.
Yes.
This is good. I have all the documents. I didn't publish all of them because not all of them are super relevant, but they filed like 20 motions on Sunday. Monday, actually.
This is going to cause the feds problems. They might have to like punch out or something.
The prosecutor's already acting like a baby. And you know what malicious compliance is, right?
Yes.
So they're asking for discovery, and the FBI sent them like thousands and thousands of documents of most of it useless stuff that they don't want. And on the stuff they do want, they send them like 10 audio copies of the same file. And so this is racking up this is meant to rack up your legal fees.
Yep.
And it's meant to also overwhelm your defense.
Yeah.
So that you're not ready for their trial in October. And these guys are, the lawyers are complaining about this. The lawyers actually brought this up in a brief. They said they're fucking with us.
I don't know at all the ins and outs of it, but I think that like, you know, if you say like, I've given you specific, because you give, when you ask for discovery, you give specific parameters of what you want. And to just dump everything on, I mean, there's always some leeway for that kind of thing, for some kind of malicious compliance, you know. But, you know, to just dump like thousands upon thousands upon thousands of documents, many of which are clearly irrelevant and which are, you could easily have differentiated the relevant from the irrelevant yourself, is, I don't know what that's called or what, if there's anything you can do, but they clearly are complaining about it and it's obviously dishonest. You know, it's funny, when I was asked for stuff, about relating to violence at Charlottesville, when I was subpoenaed after I was let out of that case, I was going to send them all the stuff I had on Antifa planning violence.
Yeah.
But then they dropped the subpoena. I opposed it. It actually went before a judge. The judge ordered that some things be turned over and some things not, and I fought them tooth and nail on this and that, and then in the end, they wrote an email saying like, we're just dropping this. We're just dropping it because they just didn't have the time and money to deal with someone like me. So,
right.
But so that would have been sort of malicious compliance, but I would have been answering directly their query, all information in my possession relating to individuals or groups that planned violence at Charlottesville. I have a lot of information in my possession about that.
Right. And so clearly this is a prosecutorial tactic as well. And when they're doing that, it's because they don't have a case. And
yes. Yeah. Like, why are you doing that if you can win? Like, when
this is going to be interesting because they're going to actually make the entrapment defense.
Yeah.
And that's, if you know anything about these cases, very rare. Lawyers are hesitant to make it because judges rarely ever accept,
because it's the only fucking tactic the FBI has. Mm-hmm. It's the only tactic the FBI has. So if a judge says you can't do it, then the FBI, basically, you might as well just fire the entire FBI counterintelligence counterterrorism program.
Right.
Because they don't do anything else. They never solved the crime. They have never solved the crime.
Well, this plot was entirely, obviously, at this point, everyone knows, even before this article, it's entirely informant-driven.
Yeah.
And furthermore, the training camp where they did the planning was hosted by an FBI informant. So this FBI informant, they found a homeless guy who wasn't an FBI informant. They talked him into this. He broached the topic. And it actually says in the documents that this man actually got a really negative reaction when he did it. The FBI agent, Hank Impala, that led this investigation, even admitted in his testimony that they initially all reacted super negatively. They're like, yo, what's this guy's problem? Like, why is he talking about this shit? We don't want to kidnap people.
Right.
So, there's no case. There's no case here. There's no case, even by the low standards of the Department of Justice, American legal system. There's no fucking case.
And so, yet, the whole purpose of this, and you know the purpose of these cases when you see how the media treats it. The media is not talking about this at all. You have to go find all the information yourself.
Well, you have to, let me clarify that. So there's motions about that, actually. The lawyers are challenging the media for meddling in the case because the media is eager to. There's actually, if you look at the docket, there's tons of media lawsuits or inquiries where they want like personal information, mental health history, and so on of the defendants and other people in the case. And the lawyers are complaining about this, saying, "Okay, now we need a change of venue. The media is the FBI can't make the case in court." So they're making it through BuzzFeed and the New York Times.
They are.
Yeah. And that's actually another common tactic when they don't have a case, is they get their lackeys, or rather, let's just say this, the FBI are the lackeys of the Jews.
The FBI does this to provide the media narrative. Like, it's not that the media, like, complies with the FBI wants to do this and then the media complies. Like, the media, the ADL, the Jews set the agenda. They tell the FBI what kind of cases they want them to generate, what kind of narratives they want to spin. They wanted white terrorism. They wanted right-wing terrorism. They wanted
something
like that.
A month before the
2020
election. They arrested these guys a month before the election in a swing state.
Yes. They wanted it for election interference. They wanted it for continued – it's not just election interference, though. It's their continued program to slander and disenfranchise white people in this country. It is their continued program to do that. The election interference is just part of that. It's bigger than just that. It's not purely about Trump. You might be able to specifically get them on that because, or at least put them like paint them into a corner on that because of the fuss they make over election interference. But
I'll say this: I think in this case, it really was about Trump because I think that the Democratic Party establishment in Michigan, including Dana Nassel, I think that's her name, is the attorney general. I think she put them up to this.
Sure.
Because she actually uses the FBI in this fashion quite often.
The Trump thing is just a broader – is just a part of the overall. I mean, they wouldn't go after Trump if it wasn't for the previous anti-whiteness. I mean, it's all wrapped in a thing together. But in terms of the immediate agenda, I mean, yeah. So I think it was did absolutely have something to do with Trump in the election for sure.
Yeah,
but they wouldn't hate Trump if they didn't hate white people. You know, they wouldn't hate Trump if they weren't trying to disenfranchise whites.
Right. Well, I think it says a lot that they're willing to ruin the lives of, you know, frankly, kind of humble, law-abiding, nice people to make a small, like, political point. Like, it's just like I can't
for like very minor, extremely minor, like very small tier political wins, they're willing to just destroy like 12 people.
Yes. Just ruin their lives forever.
Yeah. They don't think about it. Because
even if they beat this case, which they probably will, I mean, I don't know, but they might. Who knows with the legal system now, but even if they beat this case, they're still out of 50 or 80 grand or whatever the law is called.
Well, this is why we have to build a culture, internally solidaristic culture of resistance amongst ourselves. Because for Jews, we talked before how like Jews, like getting convicted of crimes doesn't really hurt them.
No.
Because their community ultimately always supports them, like financial crimes. There has to be a pretty horrific thing you do for the Jewish community to disvalue. Even child sexual abuse and stuff, the Jewish community tends to protect their own. We did the videos yesterday on Tedious about that, how Jews themselves – don't take it from me. I'm not being hyperbolic and doing like all Jews are pedophiles. I'm telling you, we watched a video yesterday on Tedious. It was all Jews complaining about how inside their community – there is a culture of protecting child sex abusers. It was like a 10-minute video. Like three or four Jews got up on stage and they all said this. So they do that. I'm not saying white people should do that. Obviously not. But my point is that for them, they can disappear back into their community and the charges don't matter once they're done dealing with the law. For whites, you still have to deal with the slander. You still have to deal with your name being dragged through the mud. You still can't get a job. You might have family members that have disavowed you. So we have to develop internally a culture of saying we don't care about that crap that they do to you and have a community that can still welcome people back in. That's all I'm saying. That's my point.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree completely. And I think that the
– obviously, we're not going to do it for pedophiles like Jews do. Those – they get
Well, they're one on the one hand, they have a very different moral system than we do, but on the other hand, also like they're also like a small group, so they need to get any support they can get, I guess. I don't know.
Well, but I mean, because they're so small, we could go into the evolutionary
I think, but
whatever.
I think ultimately it's just that their moral system is completely different. That, like, you know, Bernie Madoff, for example, is more offensive to Jews than Epstein.
Yes. Yes.
And the reason is that he ripped off Jews financially.
Yes. And not only that, as we learned from the video yesterday, the Jewish kid, like the 20-year-old Orthodox Jewish kid who had started this anti-child abuse thing, he was more offensive to them than the child abusers. They were ostracizing.
I've read about this in Williamsburg, where they got some rabbi, who was protesting against the literal
famous Vice article on
institutionalized pedophilia in the Hasidic community, where rabbis are molesting young boys and then like doing, I mean, shit that I don't even want to describe to them.
Yeah,
and I'm not talking about necessarily just teenage boys. I'm talking about like 5-year-olds. Okay.
Yeah.
And the rabbi, to his credit, was trying to bring attention to this, and he got like acid thrown in his face while he's walking down the street. The entire community clammed up, they turtled up, and were complaining to about him because he was bringing the police into it. Now, of course, the police don't have any real jurisdiction over these ghetto Jews.
Yeah, no, they really don't.
The secular ones ensure that. So it's really disgusting. They're disgusting, you know. I don't know. But the point is that, yeah, they're thick as thieves. They're fucking criminals. It's just a race of criminals. Let's just be direct and blunt. They're just natural born criminals.
This is the rabbi in question.
Yes.
Look at this. Rabbi Nuchum Rosenberg. They were attacking this guy.
He can only get an advice. Where's the New York Times article?
Like, yeah, this didn't really go very far. And Vice probably wouldn't do this today. And I think there's some... yes. Oh, look at this. There's a little disclaimer. Now, I bet you this is automatic.
Oh.
I think this is probably automatic. They probably have this when you bring up an old story. They probably put this there. But still, sort of
FYI, funny. This is from before Duke... what's her name? Dukakis or something... the new Jewish CEO of Vice. This is before she took over. FYI.
Yeah. 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 I mean, we did all that stuff yesterday. We don't need to go over it. The guy with the big sore on his lip and all that, whatnot, all that crap. I mean, that was unfucking believable. But anyway, so we have here, according to the brief.
So someone made a joke about one of those guys that you guys were talking about. Because I said he kind of looks like Santa Claus, and he's like, yeah, but instead of giving you presents, he gives you herpes.
Well, yeah, no, dude. Well, I don't know if you watched yesterday's show or saw it. Like, we were showing the video, and all of a sudden, Jesse's like, oh, my God, look at that sore on his lip. And he had this – and then it went off the rails at that point because we couldn't look at anything else other than a massive purple sore on this guy's lip. And I'm like, bro, what are you doing? Like, I would say, how'd you get that? But I think I know. But yeah, anyway, so that kind of distracted
us. Why aren't these, I mean, okay, never mind. I mean, think of the insanity of these people actually not just having power and sway and independence as a state within a state, but even running all of our institutions.
Yeah.
Media, Ivy Leagues, they're all a fucking joke. I mean, just the other day, we could talk about this. Cornel West, wherever you think of him, listen, I'm no fan. The guy literally tried to stop us from entering the park in Charlottesville. He's a communist, okay? He's a black communist. However, to his credit, and I like sincere people of any kind, even if they're enemies. I can respect that, at least. He's a sincere actor. What I mean by that is he resigned from Harvard, and he published the letter yesterday. It was all over Twitter, not in the news, but in Twitter. On why he resigned from Harvard.
That's a big deal for him resigning from Harvard. He was like...
He's a star.
The ultimate Harvard... He was like the ultimate black intellectual, really. He was like one of the top, basically the top in the country at this today.
He's a star. And so it's unthinkable that last spring, the guy was on track for tenure.
I'm surprised he didn't already have it.
I believe he had it, and he left Harvard briefly.
Oh, and then you lose it?
To work at Princeton, and they never gave it back to him.
Because they didn't totally trust him.
And so
they don't have to take it away. They could leave it. They could basically say, like,
I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure.
I mean, if that happened, because he's been there for a long time, or at least, I don't know. Yeah, I remember when it used to be that he was at Princeton or, I mean, he's been in the Ivy League for a long time. Him essentially now being out is very big. Whether he had tenure or not, whatever. I'm surprised given how, I mean, he's been around since I was a kid, dude. He was on TV when I was a kid. He's been around.
Yes. He's always been on TV. He's always been championed as the eminent black philosopher.
Yeah.
And this guy who's like, he's kind of like a social gospel Christian type. He did an interview where he explained why he resigned from Harvard and why he was blocked from tenure. Basically just says Jews. Jews blocked him from tenure because he criticizes Israel. He said it, and he said he's not the only one. There's three or four other people that have faced the same thing. And I know you had an anecdote. I don't know if you want to share it. Probably not.
I've shared it before.
Okay.
I've shared it before.
This is actually common knowledge in the Ivy Leagues. You know, the conservatives that say, oh, progressives control institutions. Progressives, PEP, progressive except Palestine.
I'll share it. I don't mind sharing it. I mean, this is a story about my father. He told it to me when I was a kid. So my father has a PhD in linguistics. He received his PhD a couple years after I was born, probably 1978, 1979, from the University of Wisconsin at Madison. He wrote a book. You can find it. It's called Old English Noun Morphology. I mean, I don't think I could understand it. And he used to tell me that he wouldn't even know. He would understand his own dissertation, of course. But I always asked him, like, if he ever thought about getting back into it. And he said, no, because I'm like, you know, when I was a kid, he'd moved on from academia, and I'm going to tell you why. Because he was like, I need to be up on the research in the field. It takes so much work once you're out of it for a few years to get back into it, and it's just a ton of work. And so he was a professor at NYU after getting his PhD from Wisconsin. He was at what's the one in Philly? Is it Penn or Penn State? Which one is it? I know that Penn is in College Station. What's the one in? He was in Philly. I was born in Philadelphia when my father was a professor at the big university.
The University of Pennsylvania.
Yes, at University of Pennsylvania. And then from there.
Which is an Ivy League.
Yes. From there, he got a job at NYU and we moved to New Jersey. And after a few years in the department there, he was probably the only Gentile. He was told by the dean. He was told by the dean, we've decided we are not going to bring you on full time. We are not going to give you tenure because you don't really match the demographics of our student body. And frankly, your PhD is from Wisconsin and we don't need non-Ivy PhDs. And effectively what that means is goodbye. It means goy bye is what it means. Yes. Goy bye. Just like what they said to Steve Bannon. They basically said goy bye. And my father used to say that. He didn't carry much resentment about it. They gave him they let him take business classes free at NYU, and he took some classes and he went into marketing and made a lot of money in that. But that's all. It was still, he wanted to be a professor, right? And they ruined his dreams.
Well, Cornell West in his interview talks about how when he was being – so he was actually one of the coordinators for Students for Justice in Palestine on the Harvard campus. And Cornell West – was talking about how some rabbi, a guy named Rabbi Jonah something at Harvard, wrote an editorial in the Crimson while he was debated for tenure, attacking him for being an anti-Semite. And Cornell West said, you know, this is – he couches all of his things as, I'm not anti-Semitic. I love my Jewish brothers and sisters. But if you read between the lines – he talks about black intellectuals. He talks about Ta-Nehisi Coates and even Nicole Hannah-Jones from the 1619 Project. And he says, oh, brother Nicole, sister Nicole, rather, sister Nicole has a lot of neoliberal friends. And so when she got her tenure blocked, she had a lot of cavalry come in to attack the university for doing it.
And let's be honest, they changed. With her, she doesn't deserve – she's stupid. She's actually dumb.
Yeah.
Cornel West, I'll give him credit. He's not dumb.
He's not stupid. He's not dumb. And he's a great speaker.
That woman is fucking stupid. Like, she's dumb. And the 1619 project, it's fucking dumb.
It's
actually embarrassing.
It's historical. It's trash.
It's being increasingly widely regarded as such, and they just don't really talk about it.
Even by the left.
Yeah.
Cornel West says that when she got blocked for tenure, the media was much more eager to defend her than him. Yeah. And he said the reason for that is that she doesn't criticize Israel. No. She's just anti-white.
Same with Ta-Nehisi Coates. He's even pro-Israel.
Yes, and he says West also attacks Jim Clyburn, Ta-Nehisi Coates, and he says, you know, we have to criticize these black leaders who are actually part of the problem. Like, they might, like, instigate anti-white feelings in people. He says stuff like this. But they're not actually helping black people. They're part of the neoliberal structure. And he says they have a lot of Jewish friends. He says white and Jewish friends. That
just means Jewish friends. Like, whites don't – here's the thing, and Cornel West probably knows it. The question is, have the blocks been removed enough from him saying this? White people aren't the ones that are controlling your fate, Cornel.
Right.
White people can't do anything about you. You are more powerful and privileged than whites.
Yes.
Unless you go up against Jews. Jews are the ones that are actually employing the power dynamic that is ascribed by white privilege. That is the power dynamic that they describe when they talk about that. Jews are the holders of that. Jews are the ones that actually have that kind of power. And it's not even as subtle as they say white privilege is. It's more overt. It's even more overt than that.
Well, he says black intellectuals are afraid to criticize Israel because they rely on Jewish media and institutions.
So who's really fucking in power then? You talk about white supremacy, and yet you actually stifle yourself. You've never stifled yourself for fear of offending a white person, ever.
Right. And he says, for example, that he criticizes black intellectuals because they publish their anti-white screeds in publications which he calls kind of hardline Zionists, like The Atlantic and New Yorker. He says these are Zionist,
they are
hardline, like kill all the Palestinians, and yet they publish these black anti-white neoliberal intellectuals. So listen, he's got his perspective. Let me just play.
Well, here, yeah. Give me a minute, Mark, in this, but just real quick, here's the thing. Like, Cornel West and no other black intellectual stifled themselves for fear of offending a white person. Not even the president of the United States. Not when it's Donald Trump. Not when it's George Bush. Not when it's Ronald Reagan. Not when it's who the fuck ever it was. Whoever it's been for the past 75 years. None of them have to shut up for fear of offending, even all the way up to the president. Even the people that run the Waltons, the people that run Walmart. They don't care if they offend them. I mean, they probably don't, but they don't care if they do. There is not a single white person that scares these people. There's not a single white person that would scare them from saying what they want about white people, about white privilege, white power, whatever they want, white supremacy, whatever shit they want to say. There's not a single white person in this country that they would stifle themselves or censor themselves to not offend, to keep their stuff getting published. But they'll do it for Jews, and Jews are actually engaged in a racially genocidal project in Palestine.
It's actually really interesting. I mean, again, this is an hour long, so we have to skip around. But
yeah,
and we go to 37 minutes around there. 37 minutes. 37:47 is the exact timestamp.
Okay. I'm skipping into there.
Just play it at 37. See what happens.
Okay. All right. Oops. All right. I think we got it about right. Let's bring up Brother Cornel. Brother Cornel.
Brother Cornel.
Sorry, nigga.
Tenure, we didn't get the right recommendation, blah, 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 blah. I said, oh, please, everybody knows what's going on. It's not a question of academic work. It's not a question of age, something else. It's politics. And we have to be honest about that. And yet, you know, I don't think I'm any better. It's just that I've just decided to be a certain way in the world that has something to do with consistency and integrity and a willingness not to completely succumb and accommodate myself to forces that I think actually are unworthy of any kind of accommodation.
Has anyone in the course of these conversations about tenure in Harvard, I mean, or in your career there generally or anywhere, how explicit has the pushback about Palestine been? I mean, what gives you the sense that it's not just political, but about that issue?
Well, one is that there were other professors who were turned down. We've had three professors turned down for tenure or acceptance at a tenure status owing to their very strong critiques of the Israeli domination and occupation, including a very, very highly talented Jewish Israeli sister. Because as you know, they got some very important voices in Israel. Has been critical of this for a long, long time.
Yeah, right.
And they're associated with Jewish Currents. I'm blessed to be on that advisory board with some magnificent Jewish brothers and sisters and others. And that's a matter of camaraderie, solidarity, and just moral and, for me, spiritual a criteria that leads me to be blessed to work with them. And so I know that there's no other hypothesis that makes any sense other than the taboo issue of the Palestinian cause. I was the faculty advisor to the Palestinian students all the years I was here. We had major events with Black and Palestinian folk, with Mark Lamont Hill and the others there. And you get feedback and you get rumors and so forth of somehow, you know, Wes is sowing division. I had a wonderful dialogue with my...
Listen carefully.
All right. So this is a. So those of you that tuned out, tune back in.
My rabbi brother, Rabbi Jonah, who viciously attacked me initially, you know, and said, "Wes is simply posing as some kind of divisive figure. He's fighting for his tenure. He's." Coordinating with the students in order to undermine any legitimacy of the state of Israel. I said, no, not at all. And then he wrote another piece and said that you probably saw it in the Crimson. You know, so Wes Church discussion. I didn't even know he'd put out. He had sent some emails that I never received. And so when I heard about it and I read in the Crimson, I gave him a call. We broke bread.
He's a debate me, bro.
We had a wonderful conversation for 2 hours. We said, I never received any emails. Let me tell you what my view is. I'll tell you what your view is. We sat down and had a meal. I started with a prayer with the brother. God be with two cracked vessels. This is going to be a bumpy night. We're going to have a serious conversation. Let's bring a little Betty Davis, you know. We're going to have a serious conversation. And we did. And we had a wonderful conversation in that regard. And we ended up talking about our overlap and talking about where we agreed to disagree. But he was in a situation as head of Hillel, where he's got tremendous pressure coming at him.
Oh, sure.
And he had many Jewish students who.
Yeah, wow. What a poor guy. I mean, can you imagine that struggle? The struggle really is like containing.
Just for everyone's reference here, the provost at Harvard is Alan Garber. He's a Jew. Yes. The president is, of course, Lawrence Bacow, another one.
Yep.
Harvard is a Jewish institution.
Yes. So is Yale, and we're going to talk about Yale in a bit. We're not done with Harvard. We're going to get to Yale in a sec. We got some good stuff on Yale. Some fun stuff. Very fun things going on at Yale. You know, there's a couple. The two people say sometimes like Harvard's number one, Yale's number two. I don't think so. I think it's Harvard's number one for some things, and Yale's number one for some things. Harvard is like number one for law and government stuff like that, and foreign policy. And Yale is number one for like social science and psychology and that kind of stuff.
Well, Cornel West makes the point that critical race theory was invented at Harvard Law. Yes. It was invented by possibly the Jewish law school in America.
And
he makes the point. He's like, you know, I don't know why Harvard was so principled in standing up for critical race theory when it was not popular. And yet they can't let us criticize Israel.
I mean, do you think he doesn't know why?
I think he knows exactly why, but he's actually like an optics leftist. He's trying to be optical, but the problem is that it's staring you right in the face.
Well, my thing is like that.
They don't care about understanding.
My thing to Cornel West is like that understanding that you have come to, frankly, undermines everything you've ever said.
Right.
Like, I don't want to be like too like an asshole here, but like. Your understanding of this, your understanding of exactly this issue proves everything I have ever said to be true.
Yes.
It proves us true.
We have the correct analysis, which is why you have to put us in a folder called Nazi.
Yeah.
with a sticker that says Nazi on it. And it's just like,
nobody
talks
to these people ever.
This is bad.
Right.
These are the bad people. We're the good people.
Right.
And so the people that tell the truth become bad. You know, that's not an adult way of looking at things. But, you know, just real quick before we move on, go to a little earlier, 1047. Go to that. I want you to hear his critique of black intellectuals on this.
Okay. All right, let me go back a little bit. Okay, I got it at 1043. That's as close as it's going to get. Oh, my gosh, look at this broad. Nice teeth.
Foreign policy. I can't say what, but you've been voting on foreign policy ever since you've been in Congress, man. You're just scared. You're just intimidated. You don't want to come to terms with the truth about Palestinian suffering vis-a-vis a vicious Israeli.
So wait, who is he talking about? Talking about black congressmen?
Jim Clyburn.
Okay.
Domination and occupation.
Actually, go back like a minute if you can. He actually you have to hear the whole thing.
Yeah, let's see where we are here.
He's going to have a whole lot of weight and gravity in her understanding of how American history developed over time and space.
Sorry about Nicole Jones.
And that's an important set of lens. It's just that for me, as you know, and I've learned so much from yourself in this regard, that the role of class and predatory capitalism and empire has to always be stressed in any discourse about race and white supremacy. Yeah. Or you're going to end up with very much what you have now, supporting Sister Nicole, which is, it's led by Brother Coates and Cobb and the others who are part of the neoliberal hegemony of the black bourgeoisie. They're the public face of it. You see? That's why Coates can write in his last book, I can't say a word about Israel because I don't know anything about it. That sounds like Clyburn just a few days ago, right? I can't say a word. But you've been voting on foreign policy ever since you've been in Congress, man. You're just scared. You're just intimidated. You don't want to come to terms with the truth about Palestinian suffering vis-a-vis a vicious Israeli domination and occupation. Why don't you just come on out and say it, Coates, Cobb, all of y'all. You're just scared. You're running scared. You're tied to magazines which themselves have been supporting Israeli crimes against Palestinians.
Yeah, The Atlantic, you know, Jeffrey Gold.
All right. So, I mean, first of all, that was a nice little cameo by Virgil Texas there. It was just like.
Yeah, he used to be co-host of that show.
So he's just like chiming in like.
This is from a month ago.
Yeah.
Cornel West officially released and confirmed the rumors of his resignation yesterday.
But. You know, I'm just, it's like, dude, is it really white supremacy, Cornell?
He's not saying.
Really? He did say that.
What he was saying in the proper context is that Nicole Hannah-Jones talks a lot about white supremacy without a class analysis, which, say what you want about that. He's saying that her and other black leaders are part of the black bourgeoisie and that they're actually gatekeepers for Zog. That's what he's saying.
That's true, but it's also like when he says like we always have to couch talk of white supremacy and race, we always have to he's doing old fashioned Marxist thing. We have to center class and imperialism, empire first, and that informs our discussion of race and supremacy. And I'm like, you know, I can agree with that. I can agree with that to a point. But the thing is, at some point, none of the people in this little drama are white.
Right.
So you can talk about class and empire. You can talk about racial issues. You could talk about the union of these things, how they intersect or where they connect. But you know who's not involved? White people.
Right.
White people are not. It's you.
White Gentile men are a minority.
It's black buttgoys and Jews.
Right.
Maybe some white buttgoys are involved, but they're just buttgoys.
White Gentile men are maybe 10% of Harvard. And if you exclude queers, that might be even a lower number.
Yeah, and they're all just going to be Zionist yes men.
Yeah, a lot of the whites that get into Harvard do it because they have legacy
money.
You know, parents that went to Harvard and they get them in.
They're not going to rock any boats. The Blatt probably aren't even trying to do politics. Or if they are, they're just going to Kennedy School. Like, what's his name? The guy who's the current National Security Advisor. Olson, is that Jake Olson? What's his name? He's the guy that emailed Hillary Clinton saying Al-Qaeda's on our side. Jake Sullivan is a buckwheat. I think he went to Harvard. And he's either Harvard or Georgetown. I always forget. Like, this, yeah. Those two are very overrepresented in government. But, yeah, same thing. But it's guys like him who just never dreamt of ever opposing. He just went to study to be a foreign policy elite by just adopting their entire viewpoint and then just going into government to enforce it, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, play a little more, and then let's move on.
Okay.
Keep playing there.
Oops.
Goldberg, if I recall correctly, was one of the biggest cheerleaders for Goldberg. The Iraq War. You
know, the wrestler?
Rock and the very 2014 with the downright crimes against humanity when it comes to precious Palestinians, be it children or women or men and so forth. And these are issues of moral and spiritual weight. It has nothing to do with anti-Jewish hatred, anti-Palestinian hatred, anti-white hatred or anything. We're talking about domination, occupation, subjugation. And we're talking about death,
yeah,
and disproportionate amounts of death among innocent people. The death of any innocent person, Jewish, non-Jewish, whatever, is a crime against humanity. But you can imagine what it's like when it's 555 in 50 days, a number of years ago. And what is it now? The average is six children every day. I mean, how can anybody remain silent other than folk who are scared and intimidated? And that's been characteristic of too many of our black intellectuals when it comes to issues of Palestine.
I mean, here's the thing, though. I mean, I don't want to be arguing with Cornell because I like what he's saying. It does have some contradictions with his own work, but I'll say this. It's also like, you know, I don't like when I hear this, like, you know, it's sort of like, why do you have to give, like, obviously any innocent person dying is wrong. I don't feel the need to, like, preface things with that. Like, it's just like, yeah, like we can all accept that as just a default, right? I don't need, it's like when people give caveats of just like basic common sense or just, you know what I mean?
Well, he's trying to do this as carefully as possible.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
So he doesn't actually get completely blacklisted.
Right, because we don't do it carefully. Right. And look what happens.
I don't know. I'm not getting a job at an Ivy League anymore.
Right, but it's like I don't care. Like what we want to do is actually revolutionary. We want to tear those institutions down. I mean, you know, intellectually, I'll only give you
the famous Mencken quote, which is that a man who isn't free to express the opposite of his opinion has a worthless opinion.
Right.
Okay. That's something that, you know, we kind of reject. That whole premise, which is why we get to the truth. We can tell you what's going to happen a year before it happens.
We could have predicted this. If I had known this controversy was brewing, I would have been like, yeah, no.
When I saw Cornel West protesting against Israel, I knew there would be some sort of consequences to that.
Yeah.
We know that.
Whether it would be Jews control, he would have to get involved.
He might actually be genuinely shocked because at another point, we don't have to play it. At another point in that interview, he talks about how, you know, I had all the Jewish students, they were supporting me the whole time. But then I get into this, I criticize Israel, and they were saying, listen, you're right, Israel does do some bad things, but you're promoting anti-Semitism on the campus. And I was shocked because I would never do such a thing. Right, I would support all my Jewish brothers and sisters if they came under attack. So he might actually be genuinely shocked by the.
Well, to some extent, he would have to be.
Because he's never really had a Jew say no to him.
Right.
Because on every other topic, they roughly agree. Maybe they might even think he's not extreme enough for them. But
I think he's probably too mellow on something.
He's too mellow, too universalist. You say what you want. He does couch a lot of his stuff in universalism.
Well, I have actually never heard him say he hates white people. I've never heard him say that.
He doesn't write stuff You're more likely to hear that from someone in the Democratic Party than Cornel West, who's a Christian communist or some shit. I don't know what he is.
You're more likely to hear it from some of the black intellectuals he's talking about that are published in the Atlantic and support Israel. You're going to hear like the ruthless whitey shit from them, like Coates and these others. You know,
right. And that's something else he pointed out as hypocritical. He's like, well, how can you talk like this about white supremacy and then say nothing about Israel?
Well, the other funny thing, and he says, like, Ta-Nehisi Coates says in some publication, a book of his or an article or something, that, like, I can't talk about Israel because I don't know about it. It's like, are you a fucking intellectual? Find out.
Wait. Like,
isn't your job to be smart? Isn't your job to, like, look at things and form opinions and inform people on stuff? I mean, obviously, we understand what his real job is. But
that's a typical caught flat-footed thing where someone stumps you, where they're like, hey, how come you never talk about Israel? You're like, Israel? Never heard of it.
Well, it's like, all right, you don't know about it. It's only like one of the, it's like literally one of the most important things. And then you just suddenly just don't know about it. And you're, and that's just disqualifying. Why should I listen to you about anything? You don't have an opinion on one of the most important, probably the most important political conflict in the world right now? Okay, right. So opinion discarded on like everything. So,
something that the magazines you write for are always talking about in
That's the other thing. All the other writers,
one very
all the other authors.
Particular perspective. Yeah. From the Jeffrey Goldberg.
So I can understand if I go to like the auto body shop down the street to get like my tires changed to rotate my tires that they don't know about it. I can get that. But you're an intellectual that writes for The Atlantic? Mm-hmm. You don't know about it?
You ever read The Atlantic aside from your
Have you read
articles?
Any of the other articles in the magazine?
What do you think of that?
That you're published in?
Yeah. I mean, what do you think of Peter Beinart and, you know, Jeffrey Goldberg? I mean, I can go on forever. At the Atlantic is a Jew for
And it's gotten, frankly, it's gotten more so. It didn't. It's gotten more Jewish in the last like decade or so. It's gotten significantly more Jewish.
Remember, Jeffrey Goldberg was one of the top promoters of the Iraq War, and yet he gets promoted to editor of this prestige paper.
Yeah, and the Atlantic has also gained in prestige in their circles as it's gotten more Jewish. It used to be a bit more of kind of like a curiosity or like, you know what I mean? Now it's like it's more and more high prestige stuff has come out in it, and it's gotten more Jewish. So they've kind of taken it over as a big thing. It wasn't, you know, I've been doing politics for 20 some odd years, a little bit more than 20 years, and the Atlantic is bigger now than it's ever been in terms of its influence.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, we can move on to Yale now. Our friend, the philosopher.
Yes, the Fischel.
Queer theory philosopher.
Right.
Joseph Fischel and his elaborate What If the Child Consents?
Yeah, so, all right, that's now I wanted to go with...
By the way, I had a shout-out to Waters, John Waters in Ireland, the journalist. He actually is the father of Sinead O'Connor's baby. It's a long story, but he gave me a shout-out on his stream because I wrote this article, so kudos to him. And he has much more to lose than I do. Not me, but other people that, like, you know... It's their business. But the point is, like, good for him. He was talking about this with great outrage, you know, that there's this guy who is not just a crazy fag in some bar who's hopped
up
on drugs.
That's the important point. Like, you can
always find a position to influence our country and the world.
And I want to also talk a little bit more about the We're Coming for Your Children song, because that could be painted as also, I mean, it's all connected. If you remember that gay men's choir sang that song of We're Coming for Your Children, blah, blah, blah. You remember that? The controversy last week?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
So that song was written by two Jews. One of them is named Tim Rosser, and the other one is named Charlie Sohn. And it was performed by a guy named Troy Iwaka, I think, who's half Jewish, half Japanese. And previous to that, now I said as a joke when we were talking about Vouch the other day and his excuses for wanting to stay in Afghanistan, I said the U.S. policy is global bakabazi. Well, Tim Rosser and Charlie Sohn had written and Troy, I think it's Troy Inaka or Troy Iwaka, the guy, like the dead-eyed guy singing the song about We're Coming for Your Children at the beginning. He starred in it along with another Jew whose last name was Raviv, Jonathan Raviv. So these two Jews starred in this play written by the other two Jews that also wrote that We're Coming for Your Children song from 2017 about bakabazi that put it in a positive light. And this was performed in New York City for like cultural elites there that go to watch this play. The play was about
My shirt is activating.
Yeah, no, listen.
Oh, my shirt.
I have an article here.
My chest, fucking.
I have an article here. So this is from the New York Times, review tackling a major taboo in The Boy Who Danced on Air. So here we have a picture from this show. Jonathan Revive and Troy Iwata in Tim Rosser and Charlie Soane's musical, The Boy Who Danced on Air at the June Havoc Theater. So this story is, this is about this is all gay Jews in this production. Okay. You have four gay homosexual Jews that are effectively pedophiles. Now, let me tell you the story of this musical.
Why are they lying?
The story is just relax. Don't FedPost. I know it's like curling to a ball. Try not to FedPost hard. You know what I mean? Like that old meme. So the story of this is it's about a boy in Afghanistan who was sold into sexual slavery to his master when he was 10 years old. And the master, the owner, was 40. And then he turned 16. 6 years passed, he turned 16. And theoretically in Afghanistan at that point, post-puberty, you're supposed to release the child sex slave. You're supposed to relieve your dancing boy. You're supposed to release him, let him go, or have some other thing for him. But because the two of them fell in love, they want to stay together. And they're worried about the sort of taboo against homosexuality between adults in Afghanistan. But so that's what it's about. And it was, dude, it was it was like, now some people were freaked out. Even the New York Times, this review I have of the play in the New York Times is like, all right, this is a bit fucking much. Like they were saying that. Okay. But there were people that were like, this is a very sensitive portrayal of like a taboo topic. And it's like, I'm just going to go Taliban on this. Like, I'm just with the Taliban here. I just side with the Taliban.
Well, the Taliban
has
moral and political legitimacy in Afghanistan because they fight against shit like this.
The Taliban.
They already warned yesterday. It's like, fags, the walls are coming to crush you.
Well, this is, I think, actually not an insignificant part of why the United States wanted to defeat the Taliban. It's not. It was partly the, it was. I mean, once they went in, why do we need this kind of stuff? Like, why do we need a sensitive portrayal?
Well, first of all, why do we need to hear from people that agree with this? Like, why do we need to hear that perspective?
Why is
do we
this
need
like
to
a,
hear
yeah.
from was it official?
Yeah,
questioning why, you know, just doing just pure hypotheticals about whether it's rational to not to ban bestiality and pedophilia.
Right.
So the problem here, it's very simple, and this is something we've been talking about forever. As America has the skeleton of a classical liberal society, conservatism is classical liberal right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have the language or the ability or the actual intellectual argument for why some of this stuff is wrong. Like this fag official that you found the video, you posted it. He actually makes the argument that in the case of Mr. Hands, the infamous two guys, one horse man, that the horse was fucking him. So in other words, the horse did consent, and thus it's not abusive. Because if you look at how liberalism is structured and then how Jews take advantage of this, it's all around consent. Whether two individuals consent is the only question that should inform law and policy. I disagree with that. I think society has a will, and society doesn't consent with fucking a horse. So this is the argument. Now, if you're a conservative in the United States, you believe that individualism is the actual core legal argument that should inform everything. And so even if you symbolically oppose or superficially oppose this stuff, you don't really have the internal logic to legislate against it. Because if you believe that individual consent, individual rights trump all social well-being, then you don't really have a way to resist some Jew that pops up and says, well, this doesn't bother, you know, these two. He actually made the argument, an argument I've made before too, to demonstrate the point of, what if two people eat someone that consents to be eaten, you know, consensual cannibalism.
Right, right. Now, the other thing is, Fischl, though, himself attacks the concept of consent, but from the opposite position, or just from, I don't even, opposite, whatever. He's attacking it from a perspective of that it's actually too restrictive. It's too restrictive. That, I mean, his book is called Screw Consent. This lecture is called Screw Consent, Horses, Corpses, Kink, and Cannibals. Oh, and I think what this is, part of this is an attempt to kind of troll people. It's like, one, he's just a pervert. Okay, he's probably a pedophile. He's some kind of paraphiliac. But ultimately, he's also trying to kind of troll you back into that consent paradigm. Because if you get outraged by what he's saying, you will then default to, no, consent is the most important thing. But he's like, aha, but now I've got you because I can actually give you a consent argument. And then he does, like, what if the child consents, et cetera, et cetera. He makes an argument in this one paper that consent based on true consent, that here's how he's trying to troll you into embracing consent in a different way or discarding it or whatever. Whatever it is, his thing is, like, true consent in theory, in the sort of liberal construct of it, actually can only exist between people of equal status, because the idea is a child isn't capable of giving that consent just because society has assigned them a low status. But women have also, against their will, without asking them in the past, been assigned a lower status than men, yet they were considered to be able to consent to sex. But he's like, but why? So he's like, so if there's a higher status man and a lower status woman, that's morally the same as an adult and a child.
Right.
He says, right. That's his argument.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, you know what? Like, I'm not going to get into the fucking weeds with you on this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is how you respond to this. I'm not going to fucking respond to that. What
we're
I'm going to say
you
is
in the closet,
we are not going to argue with these people, frankly.
We're going to put you in the closet. And if you make arguments like that again, we're going to bring you up on obscenity charges.
Yeah, I'm just going to say,
that's
gonna
how
say,
a sane
like, yeah.
society yeah. would deal with this.
Yeah, I'm not interested
trying to make the argument for why people should have sex with children or animals is not or cannibalize each other. That's not a serious ethical or philosophical argument.
No, it's not that serious. It's funny because we were talking about that. What's that? Unheard that website where they were talking about
PaleoCon website
where they were talking about the Jonathan Haidt book and how Jonathan Haidt introduced this idea that, like, of certain moral quandaries that confound your liberal sensibilities, because it's like you can't say, because you intellectualized harm and wrong and immoral violations to involve somebody only those things which violate consent or which harm somebody or, you know, that someone's like hurt, stolen from, cheated, et cetera. And that's your only conception of morality is does someone else hurt in these variety of ways, physically, financially, whatever. Right. And if you restrict that, then you'll come up, you can walk around all day thinking, well, I'm a good liberal. I only like, I think gay is fine. And I think this and that, and you could even fit pedophilia into that. Right. Cause you're like, okay, well, children just can't consent. So it's harmful to impose sex on them and things like that. I think it's actually harmful for a number of other reasons other than that they didn't consent. It creates a lot of other harms. But
once you're explaining yourself, you're losing.
Right. But the thing is,
because
like,
these people have a more institutional power than right. we do. Like, yes. This is the thing. Like, it's not just about having the better argument, because if we had the better argument, these people would all be in prison.
Right. But the funniest thing I was saying
was we do have the better argument.
The funny thing about it is that Unheard was playing these they were playing like the trolley problem games and pretending like that's intellectual exercise. Right? You know, like edge case lifeboat scenarios they're called, or just these edge cases where you bring up these funny scenarios like what if, and in a way it's meant to stump you, because if you have this liberal view of it, it does stump you, because why shouldn't you have sex with an animal? Because clearly an animal would eagerly go have sex with the person. Their animals have tried to rape people in the past. So they like it. Well, the person likes it, then it's fine too. The question is, how do you defeat that? Well, the way you defeat that is you're like, fuck you. We're not having that. That's how you defeat it. There's no need to argue.
One of the contemporary origins of this "what if the animal consents" argument is a Jew from Australia named Peter Singer.
Oh God,
who was declared by the New York Times as the most prominent ethicist in the world. Now, according to who? What metric? Well, the New York Times.
Just because they say so.
Because Jews. And so this is the most prominent. I sent you a video. It's 4 minutes long. I want you to play it. This is Peter Singer when he's confronted with this.
Okay.
And we have a web question. It's come in from Deirdre Baker in New South Wales. Peter Singer, in your 2001 article, Heavy Petting, you state that mutually satisfying sexual activities between humans and animals can develop. Please explain.
I wondered if that one would come up. Was a book review. It wasn't really an article. I was reviewing a book that discussed this issue. I mean, it is a fact that there is sexual contact between some humans and animals. And I was raising the question why we have such a taboo on this. Now, obviously, sometimes it involves cruelty and the infliction of power and dominance on an animal, and clearly I oppose that. But there can be occasions. I don't know, you know, it's a family program, how much vivid description you want. But
degenerate.
Go ahead. Okay, so...
This is really interesting, by the way. I'm clearly not on American television tonight.
Degenerate.
American host would have said that. Okay, so here's an example. A woman has oral sex performed by her dog. Okay.
I know women who've said
that this is
what, this is like just funny haha jokes. Like this is shit.
They're laughing, but this guy is going to get his way eventually.
But the other thing is though, like I hate this whole setup of a discussion. And it's the same thing with that Unheard article. They're like, let's examine. It's like, is there nothing more important that you have to do?
It's all laced in irony. And
it's all like, oh, this is funny, haha stuff. And it's like, I put forward this shocking argument, but think about it.
Right, but this guy's not a stand-up comedian. He's a fucking world-famous ethicist that people defer to.
Right, but I mean, what is it, an ethicist? I mean, you know, you're sitting there. They used to have that piece, the ethicist in the New York Times. Randy Cohen was the guy that they would write. He was like their Dear Abby, but it was like Dear Randy, and he was a ethicist for them, and he wrote a column on ethics, and people would write to him, which I'm sure he made those up himself. I'm sure that no one actually wrote to him with those ethical quandaries. It was just whichever thing he wanted to push that week, he would invent the scenario, and then he would solve it with his ethical view. And so, but that's all ethics. That's all that shit really is. It's like, let's solve lifeboat scenarios. That's what it is.
Well, the thing is that if you put a Jew in charge of ethics, why not put a pedophile in charge of a kindergarten? I mean, this is, you know, the idea, you know, if you were to approach any historical Western figure on this, they would be laughing in your face. You're putting Jews in charge of ethics.
You're putting Jews in charge.
You're putting the dirtiest of the dirty
in charge of defining the moralities for your society.
Morality in your society. So if you are complaining about why everything in our society and Western culture is depraved and degenerated, look at the core of that. Look at the clerisy, as they call it. The clerisy, right. The intellectual class. It's chock full of Jews and fans.
And also, think about this. So the morality is defined by Jews, because here we have Jews talking about bestiality, talking about necrophilia, talking about cannibalism, talking about child sex abuse, and they're laughing about it, and they're like, but your ethical system, your ethical brain can't figure out why it's wrong. Let's define these ethics. But what is the old? But again, you know what? No one's harmed by anti-Semitism.
No.
If I say,
unless you're living in wartime Romania.
Okay, think of this, Patrick. Remember when Patrick Little used to walk around with those signs that said "Jews rape kids"?
Yeah.
Who was hurt by that?
No one.
I mean, nobody.
Well,
was
they're. Well, that's
now, they would
the
argue
argument.
That somebody is.
Well, they would argue. They would argue. First of all, you have to understand Jewish morality, which is that anti-Semitism, specifically
immoral thing,
is more immoral than anything. Engaging in any kind of sexual things with
or kids, engaging in, you know, animals, racial genocide
or killing people that aren't Jews. Right.
Right.
And so their morality stems from that, which is fine. If they want to have that moral system that's called Judaism, they can have it.
Yeah.
But what they don't have a right to do is get put in charge of all of our social institutions. Social and political right. institutions are in these people's hands, and this is what informs them. What informs them is how do we stop Gentiles from not just not being anti-Jewish, but also from being mentally, spiritually, and physically healthy?
Right.
Like, how do we prevent them from ever having the health, the good, clean bill of health as a society to reject our poison? Yeah. That's their main priority. And so why would you put your racial enemies, allow them to take charge of your institution?
These let me run ethics for Israel. Like, it's just as outrageous as letting you and me be on the ethics Sanhedrin for Israel.
Right.
Let us take over the ethical systems for Israel. I would actually probably – yes, we would actually – because we would stop those young little Jewish kids from getting abused by their elders.
I mean, honestly – you know, our moral core is frankly superior to theirs. And I'm not afraid to make a moral argument. I don't think charts and data are enough to compel people to fight against us.
No.
You need to make a compelling moral argument.
Yeah.
And that's something I kind of respect about Cornel West, as much as I dislike him, and I do. I respect that he couches a lot of his views in moral terms. Those are very compelling, and that's why –
funny for someone who's a communist, right? Because he's supposed to be a materialist, but yeah.
Right. He's a Christian ultimate. But the point is, though, is that that's why the left-wing opposition to Israel is a problem to Jews, because they feel morally vindicated in attacking Zionism.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they get that they get the fix of being oppressed by a bigger institution. They don't get that on any other issue. But when it comes to Israel, they actually do get censored and deplatformed and sued and sometimes spied on by the FBI, sometimes imprisoned. So they feel morally vindicated by this. And so they see it as the cause of their time in some cases, the more principled people. So Jews have a problem with that, because that moral impetus can actually defeat Jewish word games.
Yeah,
if you're morally confident, some Jew like Peter Singer, you don't fucking sit and debate him.
Right,
you fucking throw them in prison. Right. That's what a morally confident, self-confident civilization does.
And that's, you know, it's there's a actual Israel-Palestine issue that ties in with the we're gonna will corrupt your children thing too. Those guys have been done. One of those guys has done some Israel stuff. But I like what you said about how it's sort of like they feel that. That's the other thing. Like, these people feel morally vindicated, and the pushback on them. At least leftists that oppose Palestine and the pushback they get then entrenches it. And they don't fall for the, like you said, they don't fall for the Jewish word games because they have moral confidence. So now that's sort of, the Jews are kind of wearing it down. But when I was involved in this sort of activism 20 years ago, kind of as sort of a leftist liberal, like then went kind of further left. The main thing was everybody was totally immune to the argument that they were being anti-Semitic. Now, they bought into the idea that anti-Semitism was bad, but they saw Jews that attacked them for being anti-Semitic as just being underhanded, as trying to play them, as trying to use something that is, and in fact, there are, and it's ultimately not effective, but it does, it stifles the first salvo that the Jews throw, which is like, all right, you're being anti-Semitic. You've already accepted that's bad. Like, no, we're not being anti-Semitic. It's not about hating Jews. We don't like this particular behavior. And if you're going to equate that with Judaism, you're the anti-Semite. That's what they used to say. They used to make this argument. Now, Jews don't buy it at all, but it kind of thunderstrikes them, because what do they say?
They hit a stalemate.
And eventually they have to shut them up. Like, when Jews hit a stalemate with you, they have to shut you up.
They have to murder or censor you, yeah.
Yeah, they have to that's when you just lose your job. That's when you lose your job. And ultimately, then others see that, and then they. So, what you have to do then is just filter those people out of the intellectual establishment and get all Ta-Nehisi Coates types in there, moral cowards that will just go along with whatever the agenda
for money.
Is. Yeah, for money.
So, anyway, continue the video.
Yes.
This is something that pleases them. The dog is free to do it or walk away. There's no dominance over the dog. Okay, that seems to me harmless. If
this is a trained dog,
well, it's her dog who enjoys doing it and sees that the dog gives pleasure to the companion who the dog lives with. You know, I don't see why we have a huge taboo.
Peter,
even over discussing.
Sorry, this is just weird. Yeah. It's just weird.
It's not common, but is it wrong? Is the question? Right?
Jay, this is your territory.
Let's get a psychiatrist's perspective on this.
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking now, Freud did say that human beings are polymorphously perverse, which is another way of just saying there are lots of different views that just sometimes you have to draw.
It's another way of saying he was a Jew.
Right.
Like, he was a fucking Jew. Like,
notice
that's
the woman has an instinctual.
Yes, her reaction
revulsion.
Is instinctual. She's not.
The men, yeah. Honestly, this is something women are good at, is that women will often blurt out, like, well, that's weird. Which is, yeah. Like, you know, kind of a point in their favor. Whatever you might think of sometimes women will go with the fashion and so on, that's mm-hmm. true. But oftentimes men are more capable of rationalizing. Mm-hmm. these things than women are. And
because
so
you can
she's pushing back, but notice as it goes along that she lacks the intellectual tools, the references mm-hmm. to argue back against him. And do you know why she lacks the references? It's because she's been miseducated. It's yes. because Jews control all the references.
Because she's been
so
trained
she doesn't them. Have anything to refer to yeah. to fight this guy intellectually. Yes. So go ahead.
Yeah. And a lot of times that you were talking about with guys, like, they can totally compartmentalize and abstract it out. So it's literally just like it's just like a brain teaser. It's just a brain teaser.
Right.
Right. And that's the libertarianism is like the ultimate example of that. Like,
I always say it's
brain
a Rubik's
teaser
cube.
For politics. Yeah.
It's a Rubik's Cube for smart autists.
Like, right. Like that's ultimately what libertarianism is. It's like a series of ways that you solve like edge case lifeboat scenarios, and then you develop that into like a political system.
Right.
Like, what is the core value that I can apply that solves all of these particular edge case problems, but doesn't actually solve any real problems? It solves, like, can you throw somebody out of a lifeboat if your ship is sinking? It solves, what if the child consents? It solves, can the lady fuck her dog? It solves, like, this kind of shit, but it doesn't actually solve, like, can we, how do we,
and then when you,
how do we
then
build, like, an infrastructure or a system? How do we,
and then when you argue against them, they say, wait a second, you haven't even thought this through. I've
yes.
thought this through a million times
yeah,
over.
Because
you don't know what
they've thought
about.
Through whether or not a woman can fuck
you don't
a dog.
Know about economics or social ethics or
well, that's,
blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Which is ridiculous because I haven't – they've thought through whether or not, like, it's okay to fuck your dog, but they haven't thought through, like, how to develop, like, a complex trade network of roads and trains. You know what I mean? It's like they haven't thought through basic functional reality. But it's just a series of brain teasers. And it's why it's Jewish. I mean, Jews love it. They like when smart Gentiles go into that because they can just forever amuse them with brain teasers and pretend like it's political activity.
Right. Anyway, continue this video.
Draw the line and go, that's weird.
But is it wrong? Would you want to cure
wrong,
a patient or would you want to
what?
Make a patient? So I suppose, I mean, I've actually...
I'm not going to cure anyone who doesn't want to be cured.
Right, exactly.
That's the other side of it.
So since I wrote this little piece, I've had people, sex therapists, come to me and say that they've had patients who were tortured with guilt because they got some sexual satisfaction from contact with their animals, and their lives were miserable. And they gave them my article, and that helped them because it helped them to see that other people were doing the same sort of thing. And here was at least somebody who was saying, you know, this is not a sign of terrible moral evil.
I've got a Helen Coonan parliamentary sitting week coming up. Would you like to get on the record on this?
Well, thankfully, I don't answer questions anymore. I ask them, and I don't think I'll be asking this one, Tony. But, look, I agree. I think that's seriously off. And I just can't imagine. I mean, I've got two beautiful golden retrievers. And
I thought your party stuff for
individuals. Dude.
Yeah, that's...
This makes me hate liberals so fucking much. I'm sorry. I mean, the fact that it's like, this woman is also like, one, she's a politician. One, two, she's a politician. She doesn't like it. But it's like, imagine being in that environment. Like, why? I would just like be like, you know, you people are fucking sick. And like, kick my chair over and walk out of the studio.
Yeah.
And people would start clapping. People in the audience would probably start clapping if you did that.
Right. Well, the thing is, Jews want people to be free to express themselves on these topics.
Look at that. I've talked to other sex therapists, all of whom are Jews.
Sex therapist is just a code word.
Oh, they helped. They helped all these people, all these weird perverts.
From Dr. Ruth to Dan Savage. They made them feel good.
Yes, they're all fucking
all of
Jews.
Them are Jews.
Or sometimes if they're not Jewish, they're gay, but they're one of the two. A lot of times both.
Yes. And so, like, he's talking to sex therapists, so you mean you're having a meeting at the bar after the ADL conference.
Right, and you're talking that your sex therapists have brought in people that obviously have seriously dysfunctional sexual behaviors, and you're telling them it's fine.
Right, I mean, maybe there is value to the treating these people as psychiatric patients.
Right, people with a disease, but like right. Still, you
but
can't...
As someone like that, you know, you just get in a... You get in a circle and you pass the stick around, and everyone talks about their various paraphilias, and it's just all fun and games, and it's acceptable. No.
Because the idea that you the idea that you reinforce now the idea that you reinforce that it's like it's actually okay. You don't have to feel bad about it. It's like I get it. It's like in a much less extreme, like you're an alcoholic. Okay, it's not okay, but it's understandable. This is not even understandable, really, frankly. This is not even understandable. But you wouldn't... My question would be, would you say this to a drug abuser? They might.
Well, they might.
Jews probably would, actually.
But they wouldn't say it to an anti-Semite.
No. No, an anti-Semite, they would never say that. They would say,
FBI...
They would say, you need to be contained. You need to be either killed or restrained.
If the FBI referred diehard anti-Jewish... an activist or someone even that has violent impulses towards Jews, they would not be this open-minded.
Oh, yeah. Well, what if there's a guy who just for his own personal content – let's ask this question. Okay, Mr. Jew, let's do a brain teaser. There's a guy for his own personal enjoyment. Okay, he never says it outside his house, never says it to other people, never says it on the internet. He goes home, he dresses up like Hitler, and he yells Sieg Heil. He marches around his house and he says, I hate Jews. I want to gas Jews, and he does that all by himself, never subjects anybody else to it, no one else has to see it. Is it okay?
Well, how about this? Someone
what would the Jew say?
Right. Who's he hurting?
I'm also imbiboring the idea that he's like spreading ideas to someone who's gonna hurt. No, he's not. He's not.
Well, that's another like guilt by association is another, frankly, Jewish concept. But, so this is where we're at in this country. And as I've argued before, anti-fascism's ultimate end goal is to normalize pedophilia. Because ostensibly, Jews say that the act of child sexuality is the ultimate manifestation of anti-authoritarianism. They've yes. actually studied this.
Yes.
Where if yeah, the, no, more, the more
official
the
says
more it. The more you hate pedophilia and pedophiles, the more you are likely to be an anti-Semite yes. or a racist. There's just something in a temperament that leads to this, and usually the temperament is that you're just morally healthy.
And this is why Jews have for a long time, through various different mediums, attacked the idea of people with kids being like stick in the muds, interfering with other people. Like I remember it used to be a thing where you were supposed to, the person that came in and said like, what about the children, was supposed to be rejected by everyone because what they were trying to in before any like, what about the children type argument, saying like that's, and I understand sometimes people can be stick in the muds or whatever. They can be, you know, busybodies and they can use children as like a straw man for interfering with other people's business and stuff. But like Jews start there and then they just move it further and further and further and further. I mean, Opie and Anthony,
well,
who would probably, they used to do this too. They used to be, oh, I hate these people coming and talking about their kids. We're trying to have fun. We want to talk about sex. We're talking about boobs and these people talking about their kids. I'm like, it's fine. I think if dudes, just a bunch of dudes want to get around and joke about boobs and stuff, that's fine with me. Like that's totally fine. We're not talking about that. We are not talking. That's why you have to find a happy medium, too.
This is the line.
You can't let them troll you into being a totally retarded Puritan.
Sometimes I find that sort of Catholic reactionary types will put, like, you know, casual sex or even sex before marriage in the same category as homosexuality or even in some cases other bestiality.
We're just going to lose people.
It's not the same.
You're just going to lose
people. It's not the same. Right. That's like Sohrab Ahmari. He's like willing to compromise on everything that matters. But when it comes to like abortion, like he's like very zero tolerance. He's for example, birth control being banned. Right. That's a very marginal,
hugely unpopular position.
That's whatever a marginal opinion.
Whatever you think about it.
That when you have that, when you have that opinion, you immediately knock yourself out of the conversation as a serious contender. You know, when you say, oh, women that are gang raped and the baby has Down syndrome, like, you know, if you're that black woman from the novel Push that gets raped by her father and the father has AIDS, that if she had an abortion, that this would be like, this should be illegal too. You know, like, there, if you don't have some degree of nuance on all issues, frankly, you become kind of extreme in a really dumb way. And that is total fodder for Jews. That's why oftentimes kind of Bible, like the Christian right in America, not all over the world, in Europe, they're not like this. It's particularly the American Christian right, which we know is a Jewish invention. They oftentimes play a role in being like a straw man that Jews can bounce the ball off.
Yeah, and they say to other white people, they're like, look, do you want to be so
these are your choices.
Yeah, do you want to be so like repressed like these people? Like you like to talk about boobs with your friends, you like to go out with girls, you know, you like to have sex with girls.
Right.
You know, you like to drink a few beers with your buddies, you like to smoke a cigarette, like, oh, you don't want to be like these stick in the muds, and then the next thing you know, they're talking about bestiality and pedophilia. It's like whoa,
right.
buddy,
that's why Puritanism and Puritanism and Jews go hand in hand because they play off each other. So we have to have nuance on many issues, and we do have to accept that society in the last 300 years, for a variety of reasons, has changed in some degree, and some of those changes are permanent. People are going to have sex before marriage.
They're not, they've always
people are going
they
to
have to. Let's be honest.
Right.
The most traditional wedding. The most traditional wedding is the shotgun wedding. Let's be honest.
Right. People want it. And that's I think that's totally normal.
It is totally normal. It is normal.
Men and women have sex. They meet and they have sex. That's normal.
What's the Spencer? We're human beings. We're going to have sex.
Well, you know, in the Third Reich, actually, the Germans had some degree of issues with certain Protestant Puritan types because they – you know, a lot of the girls that would go off to Hitler Youth stuff, they would meet boys, they would have sex with them. Like that would happen sometimes, like when they went off to summer camp and so on. And so a lot of the parents are complaining that the Nazis were like moral degenerates and stuff.
That's when you'll get the Jews suddenly siding with the ultimate Puritans, you know, in those cases. They'll be like, oh, look at this. Yeah.
And Goebbels has a article actually from, I believe, one of his publications. He had a weekly column where he actually wrote about this, and he's like, there's a difference between morality and moralism. Moralism is a kind of virtue signaling where you just go around looking under the couch, looking under the bed for any kind of slight, you know, coloring outside the lines. Like he was talking about a poster that had a woman with big titties. They weren't showing or anything, but she had big titties and she was holding a bar of soap or something. They were selling some product or something. And he's like, you know, all these like Protestant groups that were coming out to protest against that, they're confusing moralism from an actual true morality, which is that you understand that there's nuances, you understand comprehensiveness, that people, you know, are going to color outside the lines a little bit. You have to tolerate that to some degree. Because if you're intolerant of slight, you know, looseness, sexual looseness, slight things like, you know, okay, women smoking a cigarette or things like that. If you're really intolerant
of a girl with big tits and guys liking to look at it.
Right. If you're really intolerant of that, you're just forcing people into alliances with people like Peter Singer that want to attach.
Well, Jews will work with it. Jews will work with that. I mean, look at the way they ran the dichotomy in the United States. The moral majority, which kind of became a laughingstock and a joke in that kind of puritanical Protestantism. And there were guys that were hypocrites. Like, they did have preachers and stuff in those communities that did violate their own community sexual norms, and they're humiliated all over TV. Jews will absolutely work with it, because when there's no nuance, when like there's no allowance for that stuff, the Jews can easily just split up any group. They're like, well, look at your group, Goy. Right. He's sleeping with a woman. This guy did a thing. This guy did a thing. This guy did drugs. This guy has a girlfriend on the side. You know this. You know what I mean? Like, this guy got caught with porn on his computer. Oh, look. Looks like it's time for your whole group to fold.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah. And they do that shit. You see that shit all the fucking time in all of their attacks on political dissident communities. They always want to find personal. It goes along with the personal things. They want everybody to find personal things about each other and start quibbling about that. Like, does this guy, like, is girlfriend, like, is, you know, slightly tanner than she should be? Is, like, you know what I mean? Like, this, they want to do this stuff. They love it. Right. So, yes, nuance, but, like, no nuance on bestiality and necrophilia and cannibalism. Because that's the other thing. They'll take it the other direction. Where they're like, let's women fucking dogs. Let's take a nuanced look. Is anyone being harmed? I'm like, I'm being harmed right now by having to listen to this, asshole.
Right.
And so is everybody else. Because breaking down the moral fiber of our society like that is harming everybody.
It's harming the group.
Everybody.
If individuals are harming, because not for nothing, but obviously if you're engaging in that kind of behavior, you are psychologically harmed.
Right.
That's not something that's even up for debate. I mean, for now at least, the APA still includes these things as paraphilias. Now, every year they take more and more of them off the list. I believe they took something. Was it pedophilia or something? Like 5 years ago, the APA tried to take that off the list or reclassify
it.
There was political pushback, and they reclassified it as a fucking disease. They reclassified it as a paraphilia. It was something like that.
Well, what they want to do
from political pressure.
Their first step in all of this,
which shows you how. Like, a lot of these pseudosciences are just political sciences.
Right.
Just,
yeah. So what they've done, at least what I can tell, and I don't know how they've done it clinically, how they define these things in like the DSM or whatever. But like, I believe that what they've done over the last few years, and this has actually worked on certain types of liberals and like Reddit type people, where they have taken it. They've tried to remove the immediate moral outrage associated with child sex.
Yes.
They have tried to remove it and said, like, look, and they've talked about the idea of the virtuous pedophile, the right. non-practicing pedophile.
Oh, they
held these people up.
They yes. push every angle.
And they
change
push
it every angle until something works.
They have, like, the, what do they call them, MAPS, minor attracted person.
Yeah.
So, it's all this clinical stuff. Yeah, it takes away...
Do pedophiles now have, like, a PR specialist? Like, what good... They have good optics.
Yes, it's called Jews.
Optics pedos versus...
Dude, they do. They do. They do. But I'm like, okay, so you're trying to say that, like, simply having the desire without acting on it then is, like, not morally problematic. It's like, okay, so then, you know, but... So, what,
so then why are we talking about this?
Well, I mean, why are you pushing, like...
Like, I understand. Listen, there are people that were sexually abused themselves, and so they have bizarre... sexual, you know, I empathize. See, they play to our common sense and empathy to some degree. And the solution isn't to become completely unempathetic. The solution is to talk about these things in a sensible way, which is, okay, if you were abused and so on, you still need to be treated heavily psychiatrically.
And frankly, you need to be registered so that
you can't have
a job with children.
You can't work as a teacher or in any institution with children. But if you're a pedophile, a non-offending pedophile, well, that's not a problem for them. Why? I mean,
by saying, like, the non-offending pedophile has, like, committed no crimes. Now, first of all, who knows if he's really non-offending, right? But again, we are discussing all of this. Look. We have a fucking sex offender registry, okay? You go on that. You don't get to work with kids. You're going to be watched. People are going to know about you. Okay.
Just like if, just that's like how if it you've is. Ever, if you've ever been taken to a nut house, you can't buy a gun. Right. If you've ever confided in someone that you have sexual feelings towards children, say a psychiatrist or a professional, you know, and you want to get treatment, you can't be around kids.
You can't be around kids. And also people have the right to know. People in your community have the right to know.
You better confide. You better get help for what your problem is. Because if you don't,
then you have a problem.
Yeah. No, the government will have a penalty.
We have no choice.
If you're a child molester, you will be, and you didn't register as one, you will be seriously punished.
Yeah.
That's how a sensible society that balances empathy. See, this is an actual ethical debate where everyone is treated fairly, right?
It's not fair to other people.
The Jew puts the onus on the victim.
Right.
And the benefit of the doubt goes to the criminal.
Well, the victim is whoever the Jew says it is.
Right.
The victim in the situation is whoever the Jew says it is. So when they're talking about the map, they're saying this person, through no fault of their own, now, of course, force is maybe through someone else's fault, like they suffered sexual abuse. Oh, this person, through no fault of their own, has become a minor attracted person, however that happened. Maybe they're born that way, maybe they're whatever. But they haven't actually done anything. So it's actually victimizing them for society to subject them to punishments when they've committed no crimes. Like, no. The problem is it's victimizing other people to have their children around that person. It's victimizing children to have them
around. But everyone
is victimizing the community. It's putting them at risk. Now, the same principle that they apply to anti-Semitism.
Don't liberals love risk reduction?
Right.
On some things they do.
Right, no, it's all conditional on whether or not it's something that Jews want. I mean, because they believe. Remember, whenever they would dox somebody back in the day, if they would ever dox somebody as like a Nazi or an online Nazi or alt right or whatever, community alert, there's a racist in your. And of course, those people had never done anything. These people wouldn't even dream of doing anything. Never harmed any non-whites in their communities. Never like made an issue. Never did any tirades or beat up anybody or anything. These are people that are doing political activism or just talking political things online.
In a sense, that's like a registry.
They want to make a racist registry. They want to make a racist registry, and they actually want to make one. At the same time, they want to get rid of the pedophile registry. Jews want to make a racist registry, and they've got conservatives in their corner. Now, that's a good segue. Now, I don't want to say we keep talking about this, but just to give you an example.
I need to grab something real quick. I'm sorry. I have to walk for one second.
Well, just to give you an example of where we're going with this racism registry, we've got this British radio host, Mike Graham is his name, and he said this. This is a fairly famous little statement. He's talking about the soccer match or football match for European listeners where England lost and it was the black players that botched their penalty kicks, and some English people were apparently making racial comments about these players in the wake of the game and disappointment of losing the national or the European championship the other night. So this is Mike Graham. He's a conservative British talk show host. Now, he's also made a big deal out of attacking Jeremy Corbyn as an anti-Semite. I'm not really pro-Jeremy Corbyn, but, you know, it's clear that because Jeremy Corbyn and his beliefs on Palestine, he was attacked by Jews. And this guy was one of the chief guys attacking him as an anti-Semite. And so here's the conservative position on what should happen to people that make racial comments about soccer players.
And I've got a plan. The time has come to not only find these people, not only to prosecute them for their lawless behaviour, but also basically to excommunicate them from our society. So forget about locking them up, forget about throwing away the key, forget about banning them from football stadiums, right? I've got a better idea. Instead, let's make it impossible for them to actually have a life. No bank account, no ability to travel, no passport, no benefits, nothing. Forget kick it out. Let's kick them out. We don't need them. Britain doesn't need them. Adios, amigos. And you don't like it because I've said that in Spanish. And I'm
all right. So now this guy is not This guy's not talking about pedophiles. He's not talking about pedophiles. No, he's talking about people that said racial comments to some soccer players, made racial comments about soccer players that lost the game for them the other night. That's what he's talking about. So in his mind, and what if you were to ask him, like, would you say the same for child abusers, child molesters? Or would you have some more nuanced position?
I mean, that's the real last taboo, really, sexually. Right. Like, child molesters, you're still sort of socially allowed to basically, like, talk about, like, you can Fed post about child molesters.
Yeah, you can. Now, he probably would answer that he would say the same about them. Like, okay, well, why doesn't that happen? Why, when you say, let's do that to racists, does it actually – I mean, because right now we have the English – effectively, their version of the FBI and the police are doing this. They have asked the government has demanded from all the social media companies, anybody information about any account that tweeted what they're saying is racial abuse at the soccer players after the game the other night. I think it was Sunday night. And so anybody in England that said something racial about the black soccer players that botched the penalty kicks to lose the game the other night is going to be subject to some kind of government inquisition and some kind of penalties. I don't think it's going to be as extreme as what this guy said, but it will eventually. I mean, the fact that they have a conservative, this guy's a conservative. This guy's a conservative. I want to stress that. He's not a liberal. This guy hated Jeremy Corbyn because he was such an anti-Semite.
Oh, that was a total gay op.
Yeah, but this guy was one of the main guys doing it.
If you actually look at politics in the UK, you'll often find that Jews have largely shifted to the Tory party because of Corbyn. Like, Jews in Britain, and you know, someone like Nathan Koppnis would say, see, this is, Jews aren't leftists.
Well, in all of Europe, actually, Jews tend to be more in the conservative party than the
leftist they vote for the right-wing liberal party.
Yeah, and like, there's fewer of them in Europe than there are.
But when it comes to the basic tenets of things that matter, conservatives and leftists in Europe don't really disagree.
Right, they don't.
They don't. Like, the Tories are notorious for their immigration policies of open borders.
Right. Well, here's the thing. If you're
black
a Jew,
crime is out of control in Britain. Whites are constantly being imprisoned for things like misgendering someone. This is under the Tories.
Well, look, here we have a Tory. Here we have a conservative telling that he wants he basically wants to starve racists to death. Because if what he says comes true, because you made a racial comment about a soccer player, if everything he wants comes true, if you lose your bank account, lose your job, lose your social security pension or whatever, how are you going to eat? How are you going
to
eat?
When they did it to Jews in the 50s, they called it blacklisting, McCarthyism. That was the term for it. So they just want to do it.
Have you heard the quote? Have you heard the video?
Yes, I've seen that video.
Okay.
Right. I've seen that video. And, it's par for the course.
Yeah.
Conservatives. It's like Richard Hanina was saying, you know, any time conservatives seem to go on a moral crusade,
it's for things that leftists already believe in.
Well, No. What he said, actually, this is a little different. He said that anything conservatives actually make an issue as a moral, like a big issue, will be forgotten in 5 years. While the left, when they make something a big issue, it'll be policy in 5 years. So
a policy in 5 minutes.
And he was talking about the ridiculous ban on Sharia law in America. There's like 30 red states that have like bans on Sharia law from the times when the GOP was doing counter-jihad.
They expended political capital to get that. They took time, and energy, effort, work.
If you ask them about it, they're like, oh, yeah, we did that. It's irrelevant, but
it's totally irrelevant. And they could also they're not going to – there's no threat of Sharia law, so Jews don't need to even act on it. Like, I would say, the Supreme Court could overturn it. Why would they? They don't need to. It's just stupid.
Total Finkelfink issue.
It's like literally waste your time. It's just waste your time.
Yeah, the haters call me – was it Duganism or whatever? Back 5 years ago, when I was pushing back against this stuff, the Sharia law stuff, they're calling me a Muslim. Yeah, they're calling me a Muslim.
Oh, I remember the days when you were a Muslim.
Remember when I was a Muslim?
I remember when you were a Muslim, yes.
I mean, the only reason I didn't fully convert, I always tell you, whiskey and bacon. Anything that bans those two things is unholy. But I will say that you can take a nuanced and objective position and say, listen, conservatives are doing this because it's a completely irrelevant stupid issue. And people would fight me, including in white nationalist circles, and they would say, you don't understand. They're all coming here. They're planning to have a Sharia law government in America. This is very important. You sound like a muzzy sympathizer or something. I was like, well, go and waste tons and tons of your time and money supporting Republicans doing this. Talk to me in 5 years. Here we are 5 years later. And, yeah, if you ask a Republican about it, like, yeah, it was fucking stupid.
The idea of Sharia law was like the – I mean, the funny thing was you actually got on the other side of things. You got, like, white nationalists just becoming Sharia law fans.
Well, that's something. People are willing to take a more, sensible view perspective on Islam even now on the right.
Oh yeah, it's more.
And it's frankly, it's because the terrorism has stopped.
Yeah,
that's why. Like ISIS is over, and so people aren't getting killed. And I understand the emotion because a lot of these things come in a moral panic.
Well, if you see Muslims killing white people, you're going to get pissed off.
Right, and you're going to want to retaliate, and that's how these people take advantage of those feelings. That's not to say that outrage wasn't due. You know, they killed like a bunch of little girls at a concert in Britain.
No, it was fucked up. But also, of course, the other thing is, you know, as a lot of people were saying, you know, sexual abuse scandals in Britain were like off the charts. And again, it's like so. Once again, the state seems to be taking more seriously. I mean, this is not, you know, the thing is conservatives are actually some conservatives, not that guy, but some. That guy's a total Zionist shill. Some people that are, I wouldn't even say conservatives. They're more like not quite white nationalists, but they're on the right. They're maybe paleocons and such are saying, you know, the government cares that somebody tweeted a nigger or something else about these black soccer players and they don't care about sexual abuse. I mean, it's a very basic take, but I saw it.
Or how about niggers killing white people?
Yeah.
Or beating them after the soccer game? I mean,
well, that's what really happened.
All the videos of whites beating up blacks are fake.
But there's none of them.
The videos of blacks beating up whites is real.
They told blacks. This is actually like kind of my conspiracy theory. They told blacks, white people are racist rioting against you. After this game, they said that some nigger in a wheelchair got thrown into the Thames. Never happened. Yet, I did see many videos of niggers just running up. And if there's some guy walking around with like the English flag, you know, they wear them like capes and all that crap, or they've got, they're all decked out like England colors, just get their ass kicked by niggers. Right. Because those niggers were told these white people are out there throwing blacks in the Thames. Right. It was all bullshit. So, and I don't think that's fucking just like hyperbole. That's not innocent. That's not innocent. That's what happens with blood libels. That's what happens. And Jews know that because they're the inventors of the concept.
They invented the concept of someone starting a rumor to spur violence against Jews. And so when they do it, they're malicious.
And they also understand it very well. And that's why when they say, hey, if you criticize us, now, of course, our criticisms of Jews are not, we're not doing like crazy. Everything we say, we back it up with evidence. And they're like, well, you can't do that because someone's going to come and try and hurt us. And I'm like, well,
a criminal saying, stop talking about my crimes because right. someone's going to come and arrest me.
Yeah, if you tell people I shot that person, the police are going to come. It's like, okay, that's the point.
Right.
Like, that is the purpose.
That's the thing. Like, here's the problem. Like, you know, we have to talk about these things because if not, then the problem never gets solved and you're going to continue doing it. And that's why they do this thing where they completely categorize your critiques, good faith arguments against Jewish power. Just put it up for a referendum, right?
Yeah.
Do you agree with Jewish ethicists? Because if you already talked about the article on the hyphen about what's his name? Friedrich or
Fischel?
Frerlich? Fischel.
Fischel. Joseph Fischel.
This guy, you know, you talked about it, but his references in his article are all Jewish. They're all Jewish, they're Jewish law scholars, Jewish ethicists, Jewish sociologists, psychologists. There's even one, you didn't really talk about this, but there's an anecdote from two Jewish sociologists that studied gay behavior, like the gay bar scene. And they were describing, this is gross. Here's a trigger warning. they're describing a leather, something called, they call leather daddies, getting a much younger, a leather daddy at a gay talent show got a much younger man on stage and force fed him food until he vomited and did that repeatedly. And, this guy, the two people that, that wrote that study said that this is a great thing because it represents a, an attack on heteronormative views that sex is only penis and vagina, that non-genital sex is actually just as legitimate and can be enjoyed, as, you know, normal people sex. So this is something that they see in political terms. They see acts of pedophilia and subversion and paraphilia, moral beguilement. Mm-hmm. Christians are right about this. They see moral beguilement as a way to push you off the slippery slope and eventually create so many problems in your society, so much sickness. Because if children are subjected to images of men doing things, vile things like that, they're going to grow up to be fucked up. Yeah, if they grow up to be fucked up, then Jews can actually use them and recruit them to Antifa.
Yes.
They can use whatever they want them to do. That's what why they do this. When they break your core, when they break your moral power and your sanity, they can manipulate you into doing whatever they want. They create spiritual discord within you. And so they are able to use you as an Antifa. That's why like all those Antifa people that get arrested
they're in Portland, they look fucked up.
And maybe a lot of them, it's because of drugs. But others, they might have been molested.
Well, drugs are just another way that they do it, too. Like, drugs are another way they accomplish kind of like the same thing, you know?
Right. Those people are legitimately crazy. And we can see how Jews are able to manipulate people like that for political goals.
Right. And, I mean, their argument was literally like expose it. I mean, and it's a similar argument that the Washington Post put out. Now, the woman wasn't Jewish. I don't know. I couldn't find if she was or not. The woman that wrote the same argument that Fishel made in a Washington Post editorial, which attracted a lot of negative attention. So Jews are still, but here's the thing. They're not deterred. They are not deterred. They have been beating at this door and they're continuing to beat at it. And the hinges are starting to get a little bit loose. Yep. And they're just going to be like, we're going to keep kicking at the door of the Gentile repulsion, the immediate instinctual moral repulsion of Gentiles.
They're already succeeding. They're already succeeding. And, you know, the one thing that you did mention briefly about that article by this gay Jew was that he was like making – you were right to categorize the people that were complaining about like the sexual displays in front of children at Pride. Those were probably white liberals that were virtue signaling. They took their families to see the gay pride parade to virtue signal how much they love Zog.
Yeah.
But even they have limits. And they saw – their kids saw things. Their 5-6-year-olds saw things that kids should not be seeing. And they complained to the organizers. And this Jew's like, no. Shut the fuck – first of all, shut the fuck up. Number two, if you keep doing it, I'm going to call you racist. And so he is able to use – like I've never seen the charge of racist used in that way.
Yeah, he had some very complicated –
if you don't want your kids to see two men fisting each other, you're a racist.
Right. He had some very complex – I didn't even get to all the
logic. There was no logic explained there. What he was doing is using the power of calling someone racist that Jews created in America. Shut you up. Which is what they do with everything. They call you a racist to shut you up. Because if you're labeled a racist, it doesn't matter why or how. You lose your job. Yeah. You lose your reputation. You lose all your friends. You get your friends unfriend you on Facebook, and you become a national pariah. Yeah, and that's something that liberals are very sensitive about.
Yep. Triggering that MK Ultra programming that just like the word itself makes you run. And they don't want to be – liberals understand that even though they're not racist – you don't want to be explaining. If you're explaining, you're losing. And the one that levels a charge has the advantage. Unless you can characterize the charge itself as terrible, right? But you cannot characterize, like, our charges that we make against Jews, they've characterized, those are anti-Semitic. Those are out of bounds. An attack on someone for being racist, you can never morally undermine the power of that attack. You can never say you're using that disingenuously. Now, people have tried, but they never get anywhere. Because right. the power of the attack has to be preserved, because they need
they
to
start,
use it so
or they
often.
Start quoting Martin Luther King. I mean, people actually were going over Martin Luther King's last speech, where he basically just does CRT. He calls all whites racist. He says white people need to be educated out of their racism. Yeah. They need to understand their history of hate and bigotry.
CRT is not new.
Martin Luther King was the first CRT celebrity. Like,
yeah.
That's just a fact. And so conservatives that try to appeal to that, they just get laughed at, as Kevin McCarthy got laughed at by AOC. Yeah. Kevin McCarthy goes out, you know, Martin Luther King would not approve of this. And AOC just responds with a quote from Martin Luther King approving of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because Kevin McCarthy is a moron. He probably doesn't have any idea other than I have a dream of anything Martin Luther King ever said. Not that you would need to, but it's like, you know, if you're going to make this guy your icon, then maybe you should know what he says. But you're stupid, and you're a conservative, and you're a moron, and you get all your talking points from Jews, and you just repeat shit that you don't believe in because you're just in it, frankly, for personal money and fame, and you don't give a shit.
They're careerists.
And so you're just a careerist. You just want to advance and get more power. But then ultimately, my question for these people is, like, for what end?
Right.
To what end? You're not making America better.
To money.
It's just money, and you're selling.
And I'll tell you what, not all people are motivated primarily by money. A lot of people are motivated by wanting to be seen as a good person. And what differentiates liberals from conservatives institutionally, not the voters, but institutionally, is actually that some liberals want to be seen as good people. All conservatives want to just make money.
Right, because inherently
that is the distinction between conservative and liberal.
And it has
to be. Some liberals actually are sincere, at the very least, in the pursuit of peer approval and being told that they're nice people. Conservative establishment in Washington, the GOP, the think tank faggots, all of them, they only want money. And guess what? There's actually more money per person in conservatism. Mm-hmm. Official conservatism than official liberalism, because the only thing that inspires a conservative in Washington is money.
And it must be
nothing
so
else.
Because they don't get called good people. They are already immune. They don't care if people
call them
shitty people, because it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Now, they sometimes pretend like they're carrying that, like, a cross on their back or something, but it's like, yeah, but then you don't even do you've it's a weird thing about them, because, like, you've taken on, you're willing to take the abuse, but you don't fight for anything good. You undermine your own group and your own, even if it's not like whites, if it's like Christians or just the people in your community, the people in your constituency, you undermine them. You stab them in the back. You don't do things that are good for them. In fact, you basically, your job is managing them for your Jewish paymasters. So you don't care about being called a good person. You don't care about being seen as being a bad person. And you don't even fight for anything for your own people. Like, to some extent, we've gotten over the idea of really caring that society says we're good people or not, because we know that the media, the major organs, say that we're awful people. I've accepted that. But what I couldn't accept if I was being called that and I wasn't actually in my own heart doing something that was right.
Right.
Right? Like, these people say, I'm going to be a pariah for money.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. And that's why, like, you know, I was reading some stuff about Steve Bannon and stuff like that. Like, you know, these
Steve Bannon is exactly the type. He does not care about being
not
a villain.
Care.
And he'll be a villain for money.
He doesn't care about burning bridges to even the conservatives like Trump and stuff like that, who fired him. So the Jews got Trump to fire Bannon. They even celebrated with the infamous goy bai. And Bannon can't do anything but simp for them. He simps for the Jews, who despise him almost to a man. But in order to continue the few Jews that might fund him or support him or allow him, he will simp for the Jews as a group. Yeah. Over whites, over his actual fan base.
Yeah.
So this is why conservatives are not only willing to be bad people, they're also undignified. There's no dignity in being a conservative. Like, increasingly now, with the FBI going after even Bible study groups, where they infiltrate Bible study groups.
Yeah.
If you're not sincerely a small government fucking pseudo-libertarian who believes in neocon foreign policy, if you don't sincerely believe in that, well, the cost of being a conservative now is almost as bad as the cost and price of being a labeled Nazi. However, there's no dignity in what you're doing. Right. There's no fucking dignity. You're an undignified eunuch of a man if you engage in that. You have to allow Jews to shit and piss on you, and you have to go and ask for seconds.
Yeah.
That is
You're basically the guy up on stage getting force-fed until you vomit. And what you vomit out are conservative talking points.
Right. Right. You're in a dunk tank. You're the guy in the – you're willing to be the guy in the dunk tank.
You're up
Except
on stage.
Instead of the money going to charity, you keep it in your pocket.
You know, you're up on stage and Jews are shoving crap into your mouth until you just vomit it back out all over the place. And everyone's like, oh, my God, that's disgusting.
That's what I always say, by the way.
That's conservatism.
Yeah, that's what I always say about Rod Dreher is that when we take power, we're going to pay him to sit in a dunk tank so that we can just like just get
throw
him.
Throw oysters at him.
Throw oysters
and fried calamari at him. I'm just gonna dump expensive wine on his head.
Did you see that picture of him like photographing the sunset and shit? Like, I've only ever seen women take pictures like that. You know what I'm talking about? Let me send this to you.
Just out of
curiosity.
I mean, dude, you got to be careful with the Roger hate because it can become addictive. Like, you can start getting a fix, and then you have to. Like, you don't get the same fix you got before, so you have to go even deeper into, like, his timeline and like, find even more wretchedly gay things to...
Just put that picture on the screen. Let's see. Look, I want people to look at this, and I
dude, I've yes. Ne- what the hell? Oh, my God. Dude.
I've never seen a man post a picture like that before. Well, especially if he's alone. Like, if he's with a woman, maybe, but, like, alone? Like, bruh, where's your wife? Where's your...
It's like, dude, bro.
I mean, is he a faggot? Is he just a blackmailed faggot? Like,
he might be. Is he married? Does he have family?
I'm pretty sure he's married, if I'm not mistaken.
Does he have kids? I mean...
I think he does.
He probably does.
But, like, you know, it's what I told the Ayatollah, the English guy, in a stream. Don't bother having a philosophical debate with an institutional conservative, because their main... drive is the fact that either money or the fact that they're blackmailed homosexuals. So you just have, once you understand it in those terms, you realize that it's just a waste of time to actually discuss their inane and stupid fucking perspectives on
now,
things.
With Rod,
there's actually no principle conservatives have that is above change. Okay. See, what differentiates us from conservatives is that 5 years from now, we're going to have the same perspective on things.
Yeah.
On the major things. We might change perspective on some other things, on non-major things. But when it comes to the major things, Jews are fucking destroying our country and the white race needs to fight back. That is something you're going to get no matter how many fucking yes.
Looks nice. Looks nice. This is the rewards you get. See, with Rod Dreher – here's my thing with Rod Dreher. I don't want to talk too much about him individually, but he's like one of the worst. And you know why? I actually think with Rod Dreher, his motivation is this: getting to sit on the coast of the Mediterranean and enjoy a nice day like that, and be sipping wine, and then go have calamari, go have clams or whatever, go have oysters, and go schmooze with people, and enjoy the whole ambiance of it all, and just all be touring Europe.
Well,
and
get treated like a prestigious American intellectual, which is what the Orban government is doing.
But he's always, if you read though his blog, and I don't read it often. Whenever I do, I just get filled with rage. He's always talking about the food. He's always talking about the scenery and the food, and he's not really talking about politics. He's talking about
the scenery.
It's like a fucking travel log.
It's an eat, pray, love.
Yeah,
travel log.
Yeah, and
that's what it is. It's eat, pray, love. It's conservative eat, pray, love.
So my opinion is that is what motivates him. That's why he does what he does.
He talks primarily about traveling and food, but also about people.
Yes.
Now. Not necessarily
Sandor. His driver Sandor, who he bounces all of his ideas off of.
This is definitely
a bit about Sandor, his Hungarian driver.
I did, but I'll tell you this.
Sandor,
I'll tell
Have you considered that you might be inching towards Nazism? Sandor is like, oh, Rod, I never thought of it.
Rod, I'm on there.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
I never thought of it.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for bringing that to my attention, Rod. I'm glad you have brought your American liberal viewpoint in and educated me on it, so now I can rethink everything. That'd be great.
What I want to say is, what are the people at that Hungarian university, which is a good idea on paper, which is to create a new intellectual class in Hungary that is pro-Hungarian. They brought Rod fucking Dreher.
Yeah, it's like, let's create a...
whose advice is to run away. I mean, Hungary is like 99% Hungarian. So it's a country where the majority of the people actually exercise power over their institutions, and they exercise it against Global Homo more times than not. And so why would you bring Rod Dreher there to demoralize them and tell them, no, don't fight politically
against them. That's very interesting. So
don't fight politically against them. Run away, hide in your church, hide in your small town. Like, do you know, write memoirs about the little ways of Ruthie, whatever.
Ruthie Lemming. And
Ruthie Lemming. Perfect name, by the way.
Yeah,
perfect
name. Right?
Do the, you know, eat the good food. Let's talk about people. Let's talk about human interests and stuff like that. Let's not talk about manly stuff like politics, like impersonal, masculine politics. No. That's icky, poopy stuff. Let's talk instead about how much I love these oysters and how you should not be concerning your pretty little heads on the fate of your nation.
Well, think about this. So Viktor Orban sets up this university, right? For to be like a anti, supposedly in name and as an idea, it's a great idea, and I wish we had the resources that Orban had to do something like that. And he sets it up, and then he brings in Rod Dreher. What does Rod Dreher do? Rod Dreher then, as he's going there to be a scholar at this university, he goes and he talks to, in his words, now I don't know if it's a true story or not, doesn't matter. It's effectively what he wants to do. He's like, he goes and he throws shade on Orban's project. As much as we understand Orban and Zionism and Netanyahu and the link between that, all those things, right? And how much Orban has been involved with Zionism. As much as we understand that, it's like there's people in Hungary that don't understand. They love Orban and they think Hungary is doing this anti-American is how they see it. Anti-American, anti-liberal. Anti-globalist. He always says anti-modern, which is actually dumb, but like whatever. So he says that stuff, but then he basically is like throwing shade on Orban, and he's like, "There's a danger here that this could creep into Nazism. I just want to make sure we keep that in mind."
That's really the first principle of conservatism.
Yeah.
Now, just like with us, 5 years from now, you'll know we'll have the same general perspective on things, which is why in the end we will win. That's what attracts intelligent people and moral people. Morally self-confident people will be attracted to that. They'll be attracted to consistency. But just like we have that, conservatives have one issue that they are going to have 5 years from now, which is utter rejection of anything that can be construed as Nazism. Okay. That's going to be the only principle conservatives, that and supporting Israel and tax cuts for billionaires. Those are the only things that they are absolutely inflexible on. And so that's why conservatism needs to be destroyed, because it is actually just, in the end, it's just a door stopper for the Jews.
So look at this. Okay. Look at this. So this guy asks a funny question. He says, "What is it about us old blokes when we don't have hair on our legs anymore?" I'm like, yeah, what is it?
God. It's
like
maybe low testosterone.
Yeah, maybe there's something else. And look at this guy. It's like this is exactly the kind of thing a woman says. "The mountains, Mr. Dreher. The mountains is where the magic abides in Slovenia." It's just too gay to continue.
That sounds like something written by a woman.
It's feminine. It's not like it's gay. It's feminine.
These guys are women. They're women.
You're women. I mean,
I'm actually starting to see more and more of these NRX trad types following in Rod Dreher's footsteps. Like, I mean, I'm not going to name him because I don't want to shit on him directly, but there's a guy really hates me.
Bugman shit right there. I mean, look at that. He's a Bugman. He's a Bugman.
It's motherfucking Waldo. It's Waldo. It's fucking Waldo.
It's fucking Bugman. Irony Bro, Bugman.
Yeah. the glasses, the fucking, it looks like a cover for the band The Descendants. Like, but what I was going to say before is that there's a lot of these trad types are doing this very same thing. They're saying, listen, the political struggle is beneath me. That's their cope. And so, let's just enjoy the good life.
Yeah, that's, here we go. Hello from Prague. There has been a movement in the force since I was last here. I now find German and Austrian beer superior to Bohemian.
How this many Bookman references can you fit in 3 sentences?
Yeah, so a Star Wars reference to talk about, like, craft beer. Just, like, honestly, dude, like, it's like, this isn't politics. Like, think about what it's done. He's the premier intellect. He's not doing politics. And he baits people into talking about it. Oh, yeah, dude, I love German beer. And people probably have guys like talking about what kind of beer they like. I mean, that's fine. German, Austrian, Belgian, whatever. I don't care. But it's like, you're not talking about politics, okay? You're talking about beer. You're talking about fucking Star Wars. That is gay. That is just like...
Yeah.
What's your opinion on... There's been a lot of political shit going on the last few days, Rod. You gotta take here? You gotta fucking pull a take out of this guy's teeth.
There's two explanations for why the Hungarians are bringing this guy for a fellowship in Hungary to lecture. One explanation is that they're malicious. The Hungarian conservatives are malicious. They're working with the Jews to teach the right in Hungary how to lose. Because they know how to win. Remember, Hungary...
I like lean towards that explanation, frankly.
Yes. That would be one explanation. The other explanation, though, is that a lot of these Eastern European countries are desperate for any American to give some kind of affirmation or support for their governments, because they understand that global opinion of your government is formed in America. And so, you know, we could actually talk about Lothar
Stoddard. Well, they're almost like the conservatives that want a black desperately to affirm their views.
We should actually talk about Lothar Stoddard a little bit and his relations with the Germans. I was going to talk about that, but we could finish this.
All right. Well, I don't have much on Rodrigo. I know you listened to the segment yesterday, but for those of you that don't listen to TDS that often, this pissed me off about Rodrigo, and it goes hand in hand with what we've been talking about earlier in this show about the sexual abuse and child sexual abuse and stuff like that. How Rod Dreher did a little blog post about there was a woman who found on Amazon that a picture of her daughter had been used to make a lifelike sex doll that was being sold on Amazon. Rod Dreher finds a story. And he says, now, I know, dude, it's Fed Posty.
He's about to blow up out of my chest. He's
I know. So this is going on. This woman was like, there was a news story on it. She was in tears. She was absolutely devastated. This happened. It's like, now here's the thing though. Wouldn't those fucking Jewish people, who's harmed by that?
That's exactly the argument they would make.
I'm like, you know what? We are not going to argue with these people. It makes me want to do that kind of thing when I see this. As poor woman and the level of spiritual and violation that she felt for that. Like, think about the level of just violation of your soul if you see something like that.
Honestly.
Knowing that did that.
If I saw someone in person within arm's length of me with a child sex doll, I'm not going to say it.
But also, they pilfer pictures of people's children.
I would have a very serious conversation about that.
They take pictures of people's children.
And you know how Southern Europeans are. We talk with our hands.
Yes, I understand. But so Rod Dreher sees this, and he says, this is why you should pull the pictures of your kids offline. And that's it. That's all he has to say. Now, he got his ass handed to him in the comments like, what the fuck? And his response is like, well, obviously, I think it should be banned. I'm just telling you. I'm just trying to give you advice. It's like, oh, yeah. So again, you are covering. Now, you didn't say you thought it should be
banned.
That's
what he's teaching people in Eastern Europe.
But here's my thing. Yes.
The Dreher instinct is flight or flight.
No, it's just flight. It's like flight and flight. Flight Club. That should be his book. Somebody actually was making fun of me for not coming up with that yesterday. Flight Club is a double entendre because he takes Club. Flights. He takes flights man. To Europe, and he flees.
There needs to be a new print of Live Not by Lies called Flight Club.
Flight Club by Flight Rod Dreher.
By Rod Dreher.
But
yeah.
Like, I'm gonna like spend all day after we finish the show on Photoshop. Like, but no, listen. So, but the commenters had it right. They're like, Rod, like, what the fuck? First of all, it sounds like you're victim blaming. Like, you're saying that it's almost the mom's fault that this happened because she had pictures of her daughter online. I want a world where people can share pictures of their kids with each other. And you don't have to worry about this shit because like, anybody that does this, 15 million years gulag.
It's like I was telling people on Telegram about the movie Luca.
Yeah.
This is a children's, it's for kids.
I know about it. Yeah, yeah.
And it's made by an Italian director who has repeatedly said, this is not sexual. It's a story of two friends in Italy and they're very affectionate. They've been to Italy. People in Southern Europe are not weird about personal space. It's a cultural difference.
Well, they are weird, depending on how you look at it.
Right. It's a cultural difference. Okay?
In my experience, French people invade my American bubble of personal space more so than Italians, but that's but anyway, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Well, the point is though, is that people are physically affectionate. They touch
I didn't
you.
See anything in the pictures of the two kids playing together.
They were watching the sunset.
They were like that.
Which is something little
Italians
boys
do that.
Well, you know, boys do that. Like friends do that.
Which yeah, Italy, that? Like men will
it's
do that
human.
Too.
Yeah, but it's that's what makes people human.
Well, this is what we call the hermeneutics of gay suspicion, right? Where like any affection between men, masculine affection between men is gay. And that's because Jews have perverted society.
But I haven't seen the movie, but according to my understanding of it, one of the boys later, they have a girl in their group and one of the boys, it falls in love with her.
Right. Yes.
They run away together. And so there's no gay angle.
Gays were coping with that. Gays targeted the movie for hermeneutics. Gay people
let's be honest. Gays watch that movie
and they jerking off
to two cartoon little boys having sex with each other. The idea of it. That's what it's all about. Which is why my prescription for that is kick them back into the closet. Because when these people are allowed to do that, suddenly the rest of us in society, because they have an amplifier, because they have the megaphone.
Look at this shit.
The rest of us in society are not allowed to be human. Right.
Look at this shit. So Luca proves Disney's Pixar wasn't brave enough to fully commit to its first queer animated film. It's about kids.
Oh, my God.
Now, here's the shot from the movie. It doesn't – I don't like this animation style personally.
I hate it.
But like this just inherently does not
– True friends.
It doesn't make me say – I don't see gay. Like, I'm just not seeing it. Like, you know, maybe I'm still not.
They don't look gay either.
They're
mother fucking cartoon characters.
In fact, I refuse
to debate whether they're gay.
Yeah, I know. But again, you wouldn't, my mind doesn't even think queer story when I see this. Why, first of all, why would it have to be? And so they're,
why is the media trying to make it be?
Yes. Says while the implication of queerness
yeah,
are there.
Who wrote this? It's probably a faggot.
Probably a fucking Jacob. What's the guy's name? I gotta get my glasses on. Sorry, Jacob Sarkeesian.
Oh, any relation?
Spelled differently. Okay. But I don't know. I mean, that's a Armenian name, but I'm not. I'm not gonna. It's probably just a faggot. It's probably just a faggot. I mean, they have corrupted people.
Yes.
So here's the other picture they weren't liking, which again is the same basic. This is not a gay stance.
No.
And so here we have Pixar's charming movie Luca breathes through gorgeous animation and a quaint story paired with a quietly powerful message, one of acceptance that speaks to a lot of queer people. I don't know what the story is, but apparently in the end, it's like one of them ends up with a girl. Well, the implications of queerness are there. Implications, no overt storyline, right? So you're reading into it. These fags are reading into it. Friendship between Luca and Alberto is disappointing that Disney's Pixar wasn't brave enough to fully commit to its first queer animated tale. Luca is immediately taken by the free spirit Alberto, blah, blah. He's taken. No, they become friends. I mean, I don't know the movie, but again, since it's not gay.
Yeah, they're just hugging each other. What's wrong with that?
Yes. I mean, I don't like Disney Pixar stuff, but the point being that And this movie might not even be that good. But this was, it was directed by an Italian, you say, something like that?
Yes, yes. It was directed by an Italian, and he had to go out and say, stop calling this movie gay. It's a movie about two little boys who are friends. It's right. not sexual.
Right.
Like, the fact that you have to say that, if you want to make movies in Hollywood, you have to say that now. It doesn't matter if it's for kids.
Dude, listen to this. So these faggots, they read this into everything. So now there is a queer movie. This is the
they
comparisons.
Do this with Greek stuff too. Ancient Greek stuff. The stories, whether it's the Iliad or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And of course, they do it with Alexander the Great, where they infer from his relationship to his right hand man that he's a faggot. There's nothing in Alexander's story that says, and then Alexander sodomized this man. No. There's nothing in there about that, but they infer it because fags have to infer, read into everything.
I mean, look at this, look at this. So here we have, the director said Luca is about platonic friendships, continuing Disney's trend of not... So they're like morally abusing Disney for this. So here,
Disney isn't woke enough.
Yeah, no, Enrico Casarosa told Yahoo Entertainment that it truly goes without saying that we really willfully went for a prepubescent story. This is about platonic friendships. Now, here's the author says, this might seem refreshing to some, to see a Disney movie explore friendships as opposed to a fairy tale love story, but it's a shame that this decision has come when a gay romance could have so easily and naturally been explored.
Yeah, and then no one would watch it.
Making Luca and Alberto explicitly gay or queer wouldn't have felt contrived. It would have been a meaningful confirmation of what is already a story rich in gay subtext. So you are taking two cartoon boys and having gay fantasies.
Yeah.
That's how sick you are. That's on you. And by you putting this out there and you telling everyone and getting a media platform to say this, everyone else now says, oh, I see two boys with their arms around each other. And
which
they're
is
faggots.
Completely normal.
And they're
which
faggots.
You know, a lot of the reason, listen, it is a cultural difference, but I think that a lot of the cultural differences are also because the LGBTs are stronger in Northern Europe.
Yes.
Because when I lived in Germany, I had, you know, I had friends there, German friends, that would make fun of me because they said, oh, you're very touchy-feely. Oh, you're very touchy-feely. And you know, there was an incident where I had my father came to visit me and I, you know, gave him a hug and a kiss and stuff, and they were laughing at me and shit. Yo, I just turn around like, yo, you people literally have legal bestiality in this country. Shut the fuck up.
Well, that's the thing. Also, when you don't have, like, though, that's connected. Like, right. the lack of the healthy, you know, sexual stuff with men and women, and then healthy masculine affection between men and between your younger boys, or you know, like, again, people are, and anyway, I even want to gotta be careful how I talk about this because of the fucking hermeneutics. But everyone knows what I'm talking about. Like, it's also fine for a dad to have, like, his kid sit on his lap and give him a hug and stuff like that. They want to pervert every fucking thing. You remember? You know, I mean, it's like, remember when they're doing, and look, I don't want to defend Donald Trump in any way, shape, or form, but like, they were doing, like, his daughter sitting on his lap, he's raping her and shit. It's like, dude, just.
Well, you know what they do. You know who was doing
that. Everything healthy becomes perverted, and everything perverted becomes healthy.
Bill Maher and another, I believe Sarah Silverman or some other Jew.
She's always the one doing it.
Jews were doing that.
Yeah, it was Jews. Yeah,
I mean, say what you want about Trump, but that's disgusting. To make that inference is disgusting.
Because it's not, because in that situation,
the president has no power. Because
in that situation, if he did,
even in 19th century America, if you wrote something like that about fucking Andrew Jackson or something, he would just challenge you to a duel and fucking shoot you.
Yeah, or they could put you in jail or something like that. Like,
No, he would personally challenge you to a duel. Yes. And with good reason.
Yeah.
With good reason.
Yeah. Okay? And so, but it's not, in those situations, it's not just Trump. Right, it's not just him. He's a father. That's a daughter. So, affection between father and daughter is now sexual. Thanks, Jews. Right, it's just disgusting, and that's the big problem. And people buy and like, that's what the ever. So again, like I said, the normal, the healthy, a hug between friends, two boys right. that have their arm around each other because they're playing together, becomes right. sexual, and it becomes perverted. But then the perverse becomes healthy. Oh, it's fine to have sex with dogs.
And this goes back to the debate about individual rights versus collective rights.
Right.
So you gain the right to sodomize each other. I lose the right to hug a family member or a friend.
You lose the right to put your children's pictures online for your family and friends to see. You lose the right to share photos of your family because some pervert might make a sex doll out of your kid. And Rod Dreher, the funniest thing, Rod Dreher, and this is exactly the conservative ethos, Rod Dreher doesn't have any advice on that. It wasn't until commenters said, what the fuck? You're a victim blaming these parents. And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm just giving advice. Well, your advice, notice how your advice isn't, hey, maybe we should fucking collectively act politically to get these fucking people that do this put in jail, get this practice banned.
In Hungary, ostensibly, they have the institutions or some of them. Ostensibly, right? People on the far right, as they call it, run the government and many of the institutions, including cultural ones.
Yeah.
Because, see, in Hungary, they've retained a lot of, you know, the EU has a good part of
it's
it.
It's not far as gone.
Where the government is encouraged to fund political institutions. Now, the EU wants it to be only the left that gets funding, but Orban is, at least in theory, on paper, funding institutions of the right. So why not take advantage of that instead of using the institutions, which is Rod Dreher does, to corrode them?
Rod Dreher is going to go over there to tell them, don't use this institutional power. Don't use the remnants of institutional power that you have. Just don't. That's what he's going to do. That's what he's going to do. And he couldn't even tell. He couldn't even muster.
Patrick Deneen is another one. Patrick Deneen is also in Hungary. They're bringing all the lamest Catholics and reactionaries and the flight club. They're bringing the flight club.
That's why I think it's a gay up. They're bringing fucking gay up.
They're bringing the flight club over, the people that teach us how to lose in America, to teach them while they're winning how to lose.
Yeah.
Okay, it's like I don't know. It's like winning a game in sports ball and then shifting out the coach.
And they might not even know. Like the Hungarians might just be doing what Jews are telling them. Like these are the best intellectuals in America.
Right. These are the top right wing intellectuals of America, and they're right. They're actually right. They're right. So this is also a problem of Americanism, that if you want to have ties to the United States, these are your intellectuals that you have to look at to, you know, engage in, say, prestige or high status thinking. Okay. These are the people, right? Now, there are some exceptions. Like there are some renegades in Poland that'll bring in E. Michael Jones, who, like him or not, is a really solid intellectual.
Big step up from these guys.
Like go and read Baron Metal, which is perhaps the greatest, critique of capitalism and its history that I've ever read. Written by E. Michael Jones. I don't agree with the conclusions of the book, which is that, you know, Catholicism is the answer, but I agree with the entire history of anti-capitalism and capitalism and so on, and how the Marxists subverted it. Spectacular work of academic rigor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the Hungarians aren't inviting E. Michael Jones. They're inviting the fucking, they're inviting Rod Dreher, who is like basically the right wing eat, pray, love woman.
Yeah.
So that's who you're inviting to fucking inspire the next generation of your intellectuals in this project you're trying to build? It doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
Flee, pray, love. That's his next book. Flight Club and Flee, Play, Love.
Eat, pray, flee. Eat, pray, flee.
Eat, play, run.
Eat, play.
That's a mess. Eat, pray, run. That's right. That's the best. No, but I mean, I just the outrage I had at Rod's absolute. He just accepts that he's like, look, I'm for these being banned, but he only said that once someone else brought it up, and again, remember, it was only about covering his ass. It was only about like him being like, oh well, yeah, let's be clear, I'm against it. Well, really, because he didn't really say anything, and I'm against it. But what I want to do. Is I want to find the people that did it. I want to put them in jail, and I want to punish Amazon for ever even having it on their platform with like significant fines and sanctions. That's what I want to do. I want to make sure it never fucking happens again. You know, frankly, I would even go. I say that girl's mother gets to shoot the guys that did it. I mean, that's just a little extreme, but it would be legal with due process. I'm just saying it would be legal with due process.
Just imagine, like, can you imagine those words uttered by a Jew? Those wishy-washy, tepid words of, I guess I'm against it when it comes to, like,
oh, yeah, if a Jew says, like, imagine, like, if there's a bunch of anti-Semitic comments on Twitter, And a Jew says in a Jewish website to other Jews, well, this is why I say just go out, get off Twitter. Because it's just the it's time, just there. And then the Jews are like, hey, wait a second. This is what are you talking about? You're not mad about the people saying anti-Semitic stuff? He's like, well, of course I'm against that. But for now, I'm just giving you good advice. Well, just get off Twitter.
The only time Jews sound like that is when they're taking up the free speech thing on the right, like Ben Shapiro talking about Fuentes. He's like, I guess it's wrong that, you know, I'm not for Twitter censoring. Very, very tepid. When we know damn right, I'll tell you right now, I don't have the facts. I don't have any sources. I don't fucking know this for 100% for sure, but I know it for sure. I can't prove it, but I know it. Ben Shapiro personally coordinated with the ADL to get Nick Fuentes banned from Twitter.
Probably. But that's also think about this. The idea that, like, these ideas suck, but you shouldn't ban them. What a shitty argument.
Yeah, that's a terrible argument. That's the argument where they win.
Jews, like, because it's also like, I've seen stuff.
I've seen things where
I've spoken before to various people about, like, in the legal realm, when things like this come up, and oftentimes lawyers always do this. Yes, and
Alex Jones has obscene views, but he has a right to.
Yes, and my thing is, like, now those arguments, actually, you know, when Jews use those arguments when they were trying to undermine obscenity laws. Literally. So Alex Jones is taking from the Jew playbook that they use to undermine obscenity laws, but it's not even going to work for his non-obscene political content or entertainment, conspiracy entertainment content. Because some of the stuff he does.
All you do is loosen the screws on the obscenity door, not really gaining anything on your own argument.
What you do is you tell that judge, everyone hates me, but you should protect my rights anyway.
But the judge is like, Everyone doesn't hate him.
I know. That's the problem. So that's why you shouldn't say it. It's not true that everyone hates you. It's true that Jews hate you. And so if you tell the judge, essentially what you're saying is there is no political consequence to violating my rights. That's what you tell a judge when you write a brief like that. And I've seen it all too often. And every time I've been able
to. And ultimately, that's all judges care about.
Yes, because they're not worried about violating your rights. They're worried if they're going to get pushback or they're going to get in trouble or there's going to be a controversy. If you say, like, everybody hates me and my views are disgusting and no one likes them, I'm a total piece of garbage, but I have my rights. Well, then the judge can just accept the Jew's argument about how you're violating this or that, and he's not violating your rights. He'll just take their argument and be like, all right, well, now I'm just going to shit all over you. But if you, and I always say, never, never, ever, ever do that. And Ben Shapiro does it because he wants to train you, not because he's worried about his own thing. Because when he believes in something, he will absolutely not make any caveats. He's giving you the caveat because he's training you on how to talk about free speech. He's telling other people, when you go out and you don't like that Nick Fuentes was banned, you give the caveat that he's a terrible person first, before you say he shouldn't have been banned. Now, in my case, I actually... like, I don't have to give the caveat. Everyone knows what my feelings on the kid are. But, like, I'm not going to – no, he shouldn't have been banned, period. Nobody should have been banned.
Right.
Nobody should have been banned, ever. And I don't need to give caveats. They just shouldn't. It doesn't matter. I have my own views on what he talks about. We can debate that or not or whatever we want to say about it. That's not the issue.
We can debate whether he's the white nationalist Bill Buckley, but we're not going to.
But I'm not going to right now because he just shouldn't have been banned. And Ben Shapiro – like, he's doing that. He is telling every single person, and that's not persuasive. When you tell people that, it's just not persuasive.
That's because he doesn't mean it.
Because he doesn't want to persuade. What he wants to do is give you an example of how to lose. He's giving you examples of how to lose, which conservatives have been doing forever. That's their job.
So
giving you examples of how to lose and still
feel and now like Viktor Orban is importing that to Hungary.
Yep.
Like, when I hear American conservatives say, let's just move to Poland, let's move to Hungary. I'm like, all you're going to do is bring your loser, this disease called being a loser.
The same way libtards leave the cities and they go to nice white states and they make the same problems there that they had that they just left behind. Rod Dreher is going to do that to Hungary. He is saying, I like Hungary because it still is a place for Christians. It's still a place for conservatives. Well, you know what, Rod? You're going to fuck that up.
Well, the reason it's
you
still like that.
You personally are going to. The reason it's still like that is because most of the people there aren't like you.
The reason it's still like that is that the Hungarian right is a combination, has a Nazi past.
Yes.
Yeah. And under communism, kind of hardened. It never evolved past that. Remember, there was no conservatism in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
There was just what they remembered from the war.
Yep.
That's all there was. And America tried to integrate itself and so on, but that's all. That's what the right is, okay? Yeah. Because they never allowed conservatism to flourish. Pity for the Soviets. They should have just allowed conservatives to exist.
That was their mistake. They admitted.
They'd still be in power.
Well, there wasn't conservatism really in Germany either. Post World War I, there was no conservatism.
That's what How Democracies Jews, Die, the book I recommended on yep. Telegram. That's the
Jewish thesis. That is the Jewish thesis. So understand this.
If you're
a Jew woke and you're a conservative, if you're woke on the Jews and you're a conservative, or you think conservatism or the GOP or paleoconservatism or racist libertarianism or something like this is the way to push that issue, and you understand it's not that you're against it, what we do or say, but you just think it's a bad strategy or something, understand that Jews themselves say the key to them maintaining power and the reason they lost it in Germany is because there was no gay-op controlled opposition, conservative movement. So all the people that hated communism, all the people that hated the degeneracy of the Jews, all the people that hated the Jewish financial tricks, all the people that hated what was there, where their society was going, they were right there walking into Hitler's arms. And that's the only way you're going to beat these people.
Well, I can say, we've talked about this before, but I can quickly summarize the thesis again. And again, these aren't like this isn't like that fag talking about fucking kids or whatever. These are like really serious, rigorous Jews, and they exist.
Well, these are Jews that I agree with their thesis ultimately. They're not wrong.
These are serious people that like people at the Pentagon are reading.
Yeah. Okay? Well, here's the thing. People at the Pentagon are also reading Fischl, though. That's important.
Right. They read that for fun. But the thing about Ziblatt, his thesis, he goes through various different conflicts and populist revolutions in Europe, Italy, Spain, Germany, and then compares them to places where these fail, like the United Kingdom and America, right? And his ultimate thesis is that Spain, Italy, and Germany were transitioning from monarchies and aristocratic societies to social democracies, and that they didn't have during this transition, the aristocrats did not organize quickly enough into conservative parties.
Yeah.
So in the United Kingdom, there's something called the Tories, right? They are the party of the rich, the bourgeoisie, and the aristocrats together. And they were gay-op, right? They exist to co-opt people like Mosley. They exist to co-opt people or gatekeep people like Enoch Powell even. Enoch Powell has his problems, but they gatekeep and they co-opt. And he actually praises this. He talks about the United States. He talks about Henry Ford, how the Republican Party was deliberately ignoring all the Ford for President groups that were cropping up around the country, because he was getting well known as not just a guy who took care of his workers and increased their living standards and the working class, but also as an American patriot who is exposing a Jewish conspiracy. This was in the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And this was popular.
And had the legacy of being against the war and everything.
Right. And so basically what would happen is that Henry Ford decided not to run because the Republican Party told him, like, we're not going to let you into the primary. Yeah. We're just not going to allow you
to gay up you out of it. Yeah.
Well, because back then, until very recently,
they didn't even have to give him a shot. It was like, no.
Until maybe, I believe, in 2008 or 2012, one of those years, the Republican Party had the right to veto a primary candidate. It was in the 60s or 70s, I believe, that they introduced. It was after McGovern and the Democrats that Zog introduced the primary system.
Yeah, it used to be only the convention that there were these things would get
right
chosen, yeah.
In smoky rooms, and the Republican Party would constantly pick a loser against the will of the voters and the people. Like, the vote was either symbolic or it didn't even happen. in many states.
Yeah, the candidates were always chosen by state conventions and delegates to the national convention, and they didn't have a primary. It was only people that belong. I mean, it was people that belonged to the state level parties and went to the state level convention.
Right.
They voted for delegates. Delegates went national. So you didn't get a popular vote on this.
And so basically, what Ziblatt is concerned about, why he's talking about these histories, is that Trump actually, to his credit, managed to plow through the gate. Like the GOP establishment, he just basically plowed through them.
Yeah.
And this has never happened really in American history.
No.
And so he was drawing on these historical experiences basically to teach the Republican Party on how to prevent this from ever happening again. That's what this was about. And it was just Trump in 2016. Trump doesn't even talk about globalists anymore. Now he talks about – he's been spooked, I think, and he's illegitimate, whatever. Trump only notice the subtle difference between 2016, where Trump was railing against globalists, a.k.a.
Jews. It's not that subtle.
Versus the new Trump, which talks about liberal Democrats. So he's just Hannity now.
And he talks about socialism. He talks about and he really just talks about himself.
Shit that doesn't matter.
He talks about himself. He talks about people that personally insulted him.
That's a very marked difference from 2016, where he was talking about globalists, which are all on the left and the right.
Yeah. I mean, I think Trump was a kind of a gay up from the beginning, but I would say that the techniques he used are someone that's not a gay up could use them too. And that's what they don't want to have happen.
Well, the last guy that was trying to use them was Huey Long. And I always remarked this because when I read it, my jaw dropped. These two Harvard political scientists were basically in between the lines, like celebrating the people that decided to assassinate Huey Long.
Oh, yeah. No. Well,
it was like they prevented the American Mussolini from rising to power. These are extreme measures, but perhaps they have to be taken.
It was also, you're shot by a Jew, too, of course. But, There was a lot of people. I mean, there was a lot of people in the elite that were like low key, like
George Wallace too. Remember, he was shot.
Yep.
He was gaining momentum in the Democratic primary. He came in second ultimately, but right before people went to the vote, they shot him and crippled him.
Yeah,
he was in a wheelchair for the rest of his life,
and he knew that he would get shot dead next time if he kept going. So he stopped,
and he ran as a Bernie Sanders on economy,
and it was never
a racialist on social issues,
and it was never commented on that getting shot. He just, okay, I'm done.
You mean he still came in second. And Richard Nixon in particular, there's actually stuff Pappy Cannon has talked about where him and Richard Nixon were really worried about George Wallace. Like Pappy Cannon's whole thing was that he wanted to co-opt George Wallace. That's where the Southern strategy actually
came from. Fucking up the Southern strategy. He was fucking it up because he was keeping the South Democratic.
He inspired it.
Yeah.
He inspired the Southern strategy. Is that how do we take George Wallace's issues, make them Jew-friendly and kosher, and win, take the South from the Democrats.
Right.
And they were
able to do it. But by being a Democrat still doing it, he was fucking it up. Like they wanted to, they're like.
He was also doing well in the Midwest.
Yeah. They're like, we want to pull people with these views to the Republican Party, and you're kind of getting in the way of that, you fucking asshole.
Right, which is why I personally loathe Pat Buchanan.
Yeah,
I like some of the history stuff he's written, but actually, if you look at his career, he's actually just the Roger, almost like a Roger Stone of the GOP.
I mean, I used to like him back when I was younger, because I'd never heard anybody say anything. I remember when he was running in 1992, which I think was a gay op. I mean, why not? Why would you run in a year when there's an incumbent?
Well, there's a strategy to it that he could argue.
If he kept running, but he didn't run again.
He did pretty well for an incumbent against an incumbent, but the point is, though, is that he did this in a year where populism was rising. You know, like people were sick of the two parties. They were sick of Bush, and they didn't like Clinton either. And so that was kind of what inspired him. He wanted to hoover up that vote. And then at the end of the day,
he did run in 1996, endorse Bush. Too,
endorse Bush at the end of the day.
Yeah,
he ran this whole thing. People poured blood, sweat, and tears into his campaign specifically because they didn't want Bush, only for him to endorse him. So Pappy Cannon actually, when these Groyper types, when they say that they're inspired by Pappy Cannon, they're not wrong. Now, Pappy Cannon is a scholar and a gentleman in comparison, but Pappy Cannon is just a GOP fucking – he's just there to whip Whitey when the whites start straying, whip them back into the GOP buck-breaking plantation.
Yeah, I mean, the guy did, like... Like, people think, like, you can't get elected. I mean, it, the kind of votes he was... And then in 96, he got 20% of the vote.
Well, his after George Wallace, after they sealed the George Wallace strategy, the George mm-hmm. Wallace reaction strategy, they went on and saw David Duke rising.
Yeah.
David Duke won 55% of the white vote in a governor's race in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And this scared the shit out of – I mean – he came really close to beating Edwards. This scared the shit out of the establishment. And basically, Pat Buchanan decided – I think this is actually around the 1992 Pat Buchanan campaign. But Pat Buchanan decided that he said, actually, we need to co-opt David Duke's issues without the baggage, without the racist stuff.
Yeah.
That's what he exists for. So he's just a Republican Party rearguard, always has been. And that's why I don't like Pat Buchanan, and I don't find anything inspiring or interesting about him. And I don't think he's a model to follow.
And Donald Trump
is making an elaborate circle around back to the Republican Party. Like it's like driving to the store and saying I found a shortcut, and the shortcut takes you 2 hours. Like that's essentially what it is.
And then, you know? But Donald Trump then was like a gatekeeping against Pat Buchanan. Like Pat Buchanan.
Tried, yes.
Well, no, he then
He's a Hitler lover.
But then he like stole the whole. Well, because actually, you know why he said that though? Because Donald Trump saw that there actually low key there were actually Hitler lovers working for Pat Buchanan.
Yeah, we know.
He saw that happening in the Reform Party. Trump, with his own eyes, saw it happening.
Pat Buchanan deliberately used not just white nationals. Fucking literal neo-Nazis,
yeah,
in the absolute real sense of the term,
mm-hmm.
as his grassroots activists who built his campaign from scratch.
Yes.
And he deliberately used them. He would walk. I know this from people that worked on his campaign, that were delegates at his thing. They told me that they had Nazi shit all over the place at Pat Buchanan offices, and Pat Buchanan would walk in and pretend not to see it. That's it. Like he knew exactly who was supporting him and who was building traction for his campaign. And Trump did the same thing, 2016. Okay, he did the same thing because these are the people with the energy. There's no such thing as an energetic conservative. Never will be. People with the energy are the people that fight the establishment. And yeah. So these guys deliberately use these energies to build themselves up and then circle round back to the GOP.
And he did very well in 1990. He got 25% of the vote.
Right.
And when George H.W. was an incumbent, which is crazy.
And I believe David Duke ran in 1992 for governor and almost won, right? It was in 1992.
I'd have to look.
But it was around that time that the Zog had the scare with Duke. And they narrowly beat him. He's the closest to white nationalists that have ever gotten to real power in America. Mm. And Pat Buchanan deliberately took that energy that he was building for himself.
1991. So it was the year before 1991. Was that year?
There you go.
Duke and got 40% of the vote.
He said that's what he was doing.
40% of the vote.
Right. He said that was what he was doing.
Whatever else you want to say about David Duke, he never cucked on the
nope.
JQ.
Nope.
Not once.
I mean, people were criticizing him. Certain kind of like more extreme people were like, oh, he's cucking because he goes up to black people. He's like, I don't hate you. You know, he was doing like I don't hate
you. Well, it's not that's because it would be retarded to go up to them and say, I hate you.
Right. What was he supposed to say?
Thing. Call him nigger?
I think he was doing kind of the right thing on those things. But you'll notice that the GOP co-opted a lot of his platform positions. So many yes. I don't agree with, by the way, like abolishing welfare. Because of black people getting too much welfare
from
white.
That's a black people dog whistle, though. I mean, yeah, that's yeah. What I mean? Like,
he didn't dog whistle. He was just saying it.
No, I know. But see, that's a funny thing.
The GOP later on ran with it.
Well, here's the error. In a way, it's like the dog whistle of I'm tired of the welfare really means I'm tired of blacks.
Right.
And he just like combined the dog whistle with like the actual policy.
Right.
So he's like, I'm going to get rid of the welfare for the blacks.
Right.
And then it's like.
Right. And the GOP then moved forward. It's like, see, the fine people of rural Louisiana love small government.
Yeah, it's really just that they just don't want blacks.
Right, right. It's like, you know, and so anyway.
Dude, the whole big government, anti-big government view was sort of the result of this dialectical play that came out of not wanting to talk about race.
Yes. You know what I mean? That's something that we've taught. Lee Atwater is a big proponent of it. And we also talked about like homeowners associations that.
Oh, yes.
A homeowners association is completely and utterly.
At this point, they're kind of pointless.
If they're not allowed to keep blacks out of a neighborhood.
Like, now there could be some benefit. Like, here's the thing. The benefits are only until they're not benefits anymore. Because, like, people say, like, oh, well, you get a gate, you get security and stuff. That's all nice. But, like, you don't get the actual. Like, the point is that it's illegal for that homeowners association to do what it was built to do. You might still get residual benefits of it if the place is expensive enough and it has security so that they'll do something like, but just wait until some blacks want to enter that homeowners association. Mm-hmm. And there's a conflict at the gate or something like that. And then forget about it. The national media is going to be all over your neighborhood.
Oh, speaking of that, I want to play that video I sent you here.
Okay.
Here's the video's in this link. It's a YouTube video, but my computer gets slow if I
I've got that. So is I've got that page. So we've got another Karen problem here.
Yeah, Victoria's Secret Karen attacks and of course Yahoo News. I believe it's Yahoo News or something. No, the Griot. Never heard this one. They see that this woman is literally on her knees. Play it. Just play it.
No. It's you. Now you are. Oh, my God. Do you see this? Oh, my God. I never thought nothing like this would happen to me. She just tried to run and hit me. And now she. Did you see her? You saw her, right? They all saw her. Oh my God. Karen had a breakdown. She tried to hit me. Ask your workers.
Who's the real abuser here?
Yeah. Well, trying to hit her, how? Like, I guarantee you that this black woman was the instigator here.
Yeah. I mean, we all know how black people are.
Everyone knows.
And the other people in the store.
And the only
are
reason you don't get to see because they film.
They cut it
and they film to take away the context. I'm sure if you took the security footage of that store.
I mean, it could even be that there was some there was probably some contact, and I'm sure that it was all instigated by the black woman and the woman possibly in some self defense maneuver, but I don't care to analyze it. Like, it's clear who the aggressor is, it's clear who the abuser is, it's clear what's going on. Other people in the store are also like they're scared too.
It says here, by the way, here's some context. This is the black woman's side of the story. Mind you, Ukenta maintains they took her so this woman called the police on this black woman. Okay. She called the police. It says here, Ukenta asked store employees a call for security and mall security arrives. They then call the Milburn Police Department, whose officers treat the situation with little to no concern.
Oh, Milburn. This is in Short Hills Mall.
They inform Ukenta they cannot escort Ifik, that's a white woman, out of the complex despite her, quote, violent behavior. In a later update, Ukenta checks in from police. I have a police report, which is something true, but really, really long. She says, I'm happy I did record because even if the officer stated that I only show him a video of her laying on the floor when I show him. In one video, Ukenta reads the police report in its entirety. I'm actually curious to read this. Ifik admits she was wrong in her behavior, but that she didn't want to be professionally or socially shunned. She claims she had a panic attack after realizing she was being recorded. Mind you, Ukenta maintains, they took her statement first because, of course, she called the police. And she completely lied. She's trying to say, I started videotaping her because blah, blah, blah. So this woman called the police first, right?
Yeah.
And so why?
Oh, look at this. Ukenta is filing a complaint against the cops.
Okay, of course. And she's going to probably – and the media is on her side. The media is all going after this. Play the video, though.
See everyone asking me for an update. I am at the police station. I have the police report, which is somewhat true, but really, really long.
I'm happy I did record, because even the officer stated that I only showed him the video of her laying on the floor. When I showed him everything. Oh, and guys, I have her name now. Gotcha, bitch.
So this is, okay, so, yeah.
It's just malicious.
Yeah, the whole thing is malicious, and you're obviously being malicious.
Well, gotcha, she was out baiting white women.
You were out, like, baiting. You wanted this to happen. You got what you wanted.
Baiting white women, because she knows that she can send a video to her Jew friends in the media.
Yeah, and she's probably thinking of them GoFundMe bucks, too.
Well, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, there's GoFundMe. It says, the GoFundMe account Yukenta set up to assist in her pursuit of justice had surpassed 20,000 goal by over 11,000 at press time. So she has $50,000 right now.
Yeah.
$50,000.
I wonder who it is that's giving her this fucking money.
Yeah.
Is it Jews or is it shitty, stupid liberal whites?
It's definitely not black. Liberal whites. It's not blacks. It's liberal whites.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Kiara Dugas, Tyler McMullen, Holly Langton.
You know what's funny? Abigail Eifick.
Yeah.
Would probably give her money in another situation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Abigail Eifick, because if this is in Millburn, New Jersey.
Yeah.
She's a liberal. Okay. Yeah. But the thing is,
why she folded over,
because she knew exactly what was happening. So that's the funny thing. Maybe you should rethink your positions on this, Abigail. I mean, I know you've already been like abused and suffered, but like
she doesn't have a choice now.
Now you have to rethink them. I mean, who's the only people sticking up for you now? It's us, Nazis.
But this is actually the new black scam. Like this is just a GoFundMe scam.
Yes,
it's a GoFundMe scam. And you also get the emotional. The emotional high, the dopamine high.
Oh, yes. I mean, she was on. Life. I mean, and
ruining a white woman with pretty long hair's life.
You see how cruel and how absolutely one. She was never afraid.
No.
Okay. There is no point at which this nigger bitch was afraid.
No.
There is no point at which she was threatened. The whole thing was her baiting. So this was, what do they call it? Bird dogging. She went out bird dogging white ladies till this happened. She was Karen dogging.
Yeah.
She went out there trying to create interaction. I don't have any reason to think this woman hit her. It didn't look like she did. But let's see what this. I don't want to continue this video. I want to see what really happened.
I don't know. Do liberal middle aged white women hit black women?
Around slapping black people? Particularly liberal ones. Yeah, no.
They fucking don't.
No. No.
I mean, it's just two and two together. Play it.
Mm-hmm. Read the report,
really,
bitch.
Really long.
It's not that long. It's four paragraphs. It's really not that long.
Well, she's not reading it because there's probably stuff in there.
They took her statement first because, of course, she called the police.
They said that she reads it.
And she completely lied.
Ah, there you go. Why don't you read what she said?
Read what she says.
She's trying to say I started videotaping her, causing her to have a panic attack.
Well, that's on video.
Yeah, literally.
At which time she followed me to try to get me to stop recording. See this?
Well, that's all on video.
Right.
So I'm filing a complaint against the two officers that responded. I didn't feel protected. I'm also filing a complaint against what do you call it? The mall security. Victoria's Secret. It's like, you know, in my opinion, like, what do we expect them to do? Like, grab this woman and, you know, the manager even sent somebody to walk down to get security because they were taking too long. So.
Don't blame Les Wexner.
Yeah, don't blame the Jewish fucking lingerie company.
No,
don't blame
billionaire that owns the
No. He's no need to involve him, right?
What are they supposed to do?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't really have any issues with them. Not as of yet. Now, if they give us problems getting the video and all that, then we'll talk about that something. You
know? Well, they're probably going to give problems. I mean, yeah. I want to see the fucking video.
Yeah, I want to see it too.
Honestly, like, I also like...
There's a reason why she's not reading the full complaint.
Yeah, why she's not actually reading it.
Because there's probably something in there.
Yeah, no, she started a fight. And, like, honestly, I don't even really give a shit if this woman did smack this black bitch, but I just know it didn't happen. She
fucking deserves it.
Yeah, she needs to be slapped. But, like, you know, with due process. But, of course, like, I don't think that Abigail Eifick has it in her to do it. I just don't think she does. Look at her. She's lying on the floor.
Yeah, play the first video again. I mean, this is crazy really stuff.
I hate this.
This is the psychological terror that whites live in every single day in this country.
Wait, that's video two. So we're on video one. Yeah, dude, look at this.
She tried to hit me. Now I want really security upsetting. For you.
Oh my God. I like how no one's jumping in. No one's helping her. No.
You no, they don't want to be on tape.
You
what you did.
She didn't try to.
Oh my God, this don't even feel
she's
real.
She's laughing. She's laughing. She's not hurt.
This
she's
do not,
not
feel
hurt.
Real. You can just go
around here. I didn't try to hit you. Please don't record me.
I'm looking for the
hell. Don't record me.
Y'all got to get security. She charged me.
If getting I security, y'all, she's she not was, threatening
oh
you.
What oh, no, you just I wanted can't. Security for me, right? I want yeah. security for you now. No, don't cry.
I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, well, this is something that's happening to white people every day in this
country.
It's
happening to white women constantly. And, yeah. You know, my question, yeah. I do, though, kind of want to say, like, any white woman, this could happen to you. So
yeah.
if you're donating to this woman's GoFundMe, if you are joining in these social media mobs and these because you think you're so fucking virtuous because you think that there's something that happened. You think there's something
they're not,
to this.
They're not virtuous. What they're doing is that they think that one, this achieves status for them in their professional and social circles, and two, they're incentivized by Jews, in other words, to do this. And two, if they're ever in trouble, they think they can point to it and say, look, I donated to this black grifter's GoFundMe.
Yeah, they might. I mean, it's not going to do anything. They're not going to care. They're just going to say, oh, so you're
it's almost like a racial. Fucking... It's almost like a racial tithe.
Yeah, now, well, it is a racial tithe, but it's not going to help you.
In my opinion, I'm glad when white liberals, like, of course, this black woman's never going to file a lawsuit against anyone. It's never going to happen. She's going to pocket that money. She's going to spend all that money on weeds and nails.
She's saying she's filing a complaint against this and that. There's no complaints being filed.
There's no complaint. Well, there might be a complaint, but she seems to be pushing the notion that she's going to sue over this.
What's a filing complaint means?
We all know.
She probably might file
You can file a complaint all you want. It never gets read. But
it's not a legal complaint.
Filing a lawsuit is different, but she doesn't really have a case here, first of all. And second of all, she's... We know what black people do with all the money they fucking raise. We saw this. We see this repeatedly. They just
even if she was slapped, she still wouldn't go to court.
She would just keep the money.
Yeah,
this is
fraud. And GoFundMe is never going to hold her accountable for it.
No, and neither is the law because technically it's illegal to do this. She's going to steal
to
the money.
To raise money on those online platforms and not use it for what you say you're going to is illegal. It's fraud. And she's going to just take the money and no one's going to hold her accountable for the fact.
Look at how the FBI is torturing a triple amputee who raised some money for the Donald. He was involved with the Donald Trump wall fundraiser. And there was some small minor issue that interpreted with the least charity possible by the Department of Justice. And the FBI is now fucking with this guy.
Well, if you're gonna say that's fraud, well, maybe there was some fraud there, but then I expect you to go after these people too.
Yeah, they're
not. If you're
not
gonna do that, then fuck you.
They're not going to.
No, they're not going to. I want to go back to this. I want to see if she ever does say anything.
You know, that'd be another story.
Yeah, she ever
I'm gonna
say,
read this in its entirety.
Okay, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so she's
listen to this. I spoke with Miss. Crazy lady and advised her that I spoke to the store employee and that they corresponded that what Miss Ukenta had said happened.
What is it that you say happened?
And Miss Blank seemed to acknowledge that she was wrong, saying she was concerned about losing her job and apartment if the video posted online.
There
you go. See this? And that she was having a panic attack about the videotaping. I advised her that Miss Ukenta has a right to videotape. I asked her several times if she was all right and if she needed an ambulance, and she declined repeatedly. She kept expressing her concern about her job and apartment. She finally stated that she was going home, and I asked if she would be okay to drive, and she says she was. At this time, Miss left the mall voluntarily with mall security. He got his full name, yeah. Escorting her. I then walked over to Miss Ukenta and again advised her of the procedure for signing a complaint with the court and asked her to email. He didn't explain that to me. He didn't tell me how to file a complaint. I have that on video too.
Yeah, I guarantee that's wrong, but whatever.
Well, what does that tell you? I mean, this goes to what we were saying before, that liberals don't actually, white liberal women don't actually believe anything that they say. What this is about is that they want to keep their job and apartment. Mm-hmm. That's what the real motivation for all this stuff is. That's why when people talk about, like, when you get kind of incel-y black pigeon stuff about how women support liberalism and leftism, well, that's a product of women being forced to feed themselves and having these precarious, politically correct office jobs. You know, mm-hmm. a woman can't just leave her office job and become a welder, okay? It's just not going to happen.
And there's a reason why married women are more right-wing. It's also another reason why Jews want to attack marriage.
They have security, right. They don't want women to have... Right? Well, they attack heterosexual relationships in general because they don't want women to have security
of a man.
There's
a number of reasons. That's just another one.
Yeah. Right. That's just so another that's how they're able to compel. They take women hostage.
Yeah.
And not only always unwilling, a lot of these women like the Rod Dreher lifestyle. They like that lifestyle, being able to travel, their debt. They like to buy things. They like to trade in a new car every year.
Well, if this is Millburn, New Jersey, and that's the Short Hills Mall, which is one of the most fancy and expensive malls in the country, probably. Because that's what I think that, you know, Millburn, New Jersey is a super rich town. Short Hills is a neighborhood of Millburn, which is like a super rich fucking town. So if they're in Millburn, New Jersey, it's very, very wealthy, very Jewish. And I don't know if this woman is Jewish. There's a lot of rich whites there, too. But this wouldn't be happening if she was Jewish. This wouldn't be happening if she was Jewish.
Jewish, they would, she would try and pitch this video to the media, and they would just cover it up.
If she was Jewish, she wouldn't fold like that. And essentially, like, this would have just all gone down very, very differently.
Right, because Jews have the power of racial solidarity, and they know it trumps blacks.
Yeah, no, this would not go anywhere if this woman was Jewish.
Right. So, yeah. So, anyway, this is what
a black person would still try it, because if they couldn't tell the difference, they would still try it, but it just would fail.
They would fail. Yeah. You know, and this is what it boils down to. What this woman is saying, no, I'm going to lose my apartment
it's still not clear, though, that there's any part. Now, if there was a part where this woman was where she was assaulted, if this nigger says that at some point this white lady slapped her or hit her, she would read that part of the report. That's not in there. Apparently, she sees the assault on her as she's trying to do like a dialing it back to know the assault is her following me and badgering me about the video.
Yeah. That's by the way, it isn't legal to film someone indoors in a store. That's not actually legal. So she could, this lady, if she has any fight in her, could actually sue her for, you know, you could do things like, or at least in theory you could. I mean, you could just fuck with her by filing a lawsuit against this nigger.
Here's the thing, though.
And even if it gets thrown out, make her use her GoFundMe money for a lawyer.
Yeah. Is there some kind of thing where, like, if the store says it's okay, then it's okay to do it? Or is it not?
Yeah, I mean, you can get permission from the store. I'm sure Les Wexler...
The store's
going
to get permission. They already did. She said in the thing that they said she's allowed to do it.
Okay.
The store, while this woman is breaking down on the floor, having a nervous breakdown on the floor, because she's being recorded, the store says it's okay for you to keep recording that. That's what they say. That's what they say.
Why?
Yeah. Don't go to Victoria's Secret.
Sickening. Anyway.
Do the Rod Dreher thing. Well, just don't shop there.
Yeah.
Well, no, Rod Dreher's thing is white people just don't go shopping.
Don't go shopping.
Don't go to the store. Because this could happen.
Don't live. He can't say don't live around black people, but that's what he would recommend if he could.
He won't touch it because ultimately the racial aspect of it is too obvious. Because it's not like anyone can. It's not like anyone can do this to anyone. Blacks can do this to whites, and that's it.
But this is, I mean, show someone this, like, just a black woman with a camera phone can elicit this kind of response in just everyday white people. I mean, that's pretty fucking insane that this country don't fucking talk to me for 5 fucking minutes about anything happening in Cuba or North Korea when this is happening in America.
Yeah, don't talk to me for a second about white
don't
privilege.
Don't fucking talk to me about
who was the privileged one in that interaction.
That stuff's now a joke. Like, the white privilege stuff at this point, they're not even really they're still pushing it, but like,
well,
if you
what
talk
they
to,
do is they call
even some white people that got caught up in the Black Lives Matter stuff. Like, if you talk to them a year later, they're like, "Yeah, this has gone too far. Like, this is bullshit."
Yeah,
even liberals behind closed doors.
Now that's why they're doing the thing. Because they can't really credibly talk about white privilege when things like this are happening all the time. So they talk about like it's the white fragility thing.
White fragility. They're saying white people want to abuse black people, but now that we're equal,
now that black people can fight back, you see these meltdowns. This is the meltdown of a white woman. Weak
Whitey was all
right. This is the meltdown of a white person unable to abuse a black person. No, what this is a black person being given social permission to terrorize, and torture white people.
Yeah. Given institutional privileges.
Yes. It's institutional privilege and permission from the media to
and never
do
forget,
this.
Don't ever forget the Jewish nexus in this. Because the people that give Jews legal, political, social, and economic power, that give blacks the power to do this, are Jews.
Oh, yeah. Blacks can't do this without Jews.
Without Jews, blacks are just a caged pit bull.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's letting them out? Yeah. That's the question.
Who's sicking them
on
you?
What matters? It's not that hard to understand.
Yeah, who's sicking these people on you?
Not even sicking. Who's letting them out? Okay, who's letting all the black criminals out of prison? Right, that's who's responsible when the black criminal goes and kills someone. So, fucking, it's not that hard. People that act like the Jewish question is this like really elusive, it's hard to explain. It's better to just blame blacks for everything. No,
talking stupid.
Without the Jewish nexus, none of this makes any sense. None of it. So that is always vital. That's who we have to focus on 100% every time. Even though it's tempting to get really mad at this black woman, she's just responding to incentives. Just like the white liberals who donate to this black woman's GoFundMe are responding to incentives. And the nexus is Jews. Jews are creating these social incentives.
These niggers are so fucking stupid. There's a bunch of niggers in the comment in this video saying, like, that police officer needs to be arrested for filing a false report. It's like, dude, niggers are so stupid. Imagine people that stupid and thinking they're actually the ones running this shit.
No. Right. Imagine, like, making that argument. I'm not going to name names, but you get that from some paleocons.
Black run America. Kind of died in recent years, though. Like, you don't get the black run America stuff.
Now everyone knows about the Jews, and everyone's going to talk about it. And if you don't talk about it,
black run America was always, like, we all know that was always black fucking stupid. You remember that? Do you remember that?
I remember that shit. It's fucking dumb.
It was always dumb. It was always fucking dumb.
Right. Like, if a pit bull bites someone, you don't get mad at the pit bull. You fucking get mad at the owner.
Yeah. I mean, you still might have to put the pit bull down, but still, yeah.
Anyway, let's go to the last thing I wanted to discuss. This is a little hotter of a topic. This is the last thing. I want to talk about Lothrop Stoddard.
Okay.
Now, Lothrop Stoddard, understandably, has a good – he is a good, American racialist. For good reason. They see him. But one thing that is important is that this is almost like a, I don't want to say optics debate, but there's this weird strain of white nationalism in America that is strangely, you know, open about attacking Southern and Eastern Europeans and stuff like that. But that gets really kind of like they clench up when you bring up the Jews. Now, Lothrop Stoddard was a pre-war academic, so he could talk about Jews to some extent, although his take on the Jews is always really dumb, which is that Jews are bad because they're part Negro. That's really stupid, and it's probably not even true, but that was his argument for why Jews are bad. He never really got into the nuts and bolts of what it is, but
an old racialist pamphlet about that. It's just like some old racialist pamphlet from like 100 years ago about the Jew and the Negro. It's really funny.
The Nazis, arguably, they did kind of what Orban may be doing with Dreher, in that they wanted to bring a journalist who they thought would be sympathetic and give him a fair shake to Germany in 1940. It's a famous piece of reporting.
We've talked about this many times.
It's great journalism. It's Into the Darkness. However, there's some very weird fucking things in this book. So first of all, Lothrop Stoddard was not necessarily a ethnic or racial nationalist. He was more so an Anglo.
Yeah, he was an Anglicist. Yeah,
an Anglicist. And if you
or
read,
a Nordicist, if you will, but really an Anglicist.
Sure, but here's the problem with the Nordicist angle. There, in his book, Rising Tide of Color, there's a chapter in it about Germany. And it's extremely hostile to Germany. This is written around the time of the First World War, and so there's jingoistic propaganda there. And here's a quote from it. It says, "The abnormal growth of national imperialism particularly wrought fatal havoc. The exponents of imperialistic propaganda like pan-Germanism," imagine, not for nothing, an Anglophile complaining about,
well, that's just like, don't compete with us, please.
Right. It's about competition. It says, "The exponents of imperialistic propaganda is like pan-Germanism and pan-Slavism put forth literally boundless pretensions, planning the domination of the entire planet."
Dude, Carol Quigley, who is by no means a racialist, says the same shit because he was also an Anglo-imperialist.
Right. The sun never sets on the British Empire.
Fucking contempt. He talks about all the benefits of the British Empire, how liberal it was, how much advancement it brought, how great it was. He's friendly to Cecil Rhodes, who people think is a big racist. He wasn't. He was a fucking liberal. But like, I'm pointing to the book on myself. He had the same view. He hated German and Japanese. It wasn't even that it was other white. German and Japanese, it's like, that was just, no. And he had just, Slavs, forget about it, it's total contempt. Total contempt. But the Germans, because they were actually dangerous. He said that they were like mental cases.
They were competing.
Yeah.
You know, the sun never sets on the British Empire.
Why
and
can't
then
you just
around,
at least like be like, we're competing, but it's like, see, the Germans would be like.
Yeah, the Germans were like, we're competing with the British. Well, actually, they weren't saying that. The Germans were saying, we're not interested in colonies, really. We just need to expand or we need to unite the German people territorially because we can't feed ourselves.
Yeah.
We can't feed ourselves. We're completely trapped by Britain. We're trapped on the oceans by Britain. Yeah. We cannot feed ourselves. We are at a fundamental disadvantage. And so we need to unite Austria and German territories. But that was in the Second War. But anyway, listen to this. This is what I don't like about this. It's very, very nasty what he writes here. He goes, Chamberlain makes – this he's talking about Hasson Stewart Chamberlain. Chamberlain makes two cardinal assumptions. He conceives modern Germany as racially almost purely Nordic, and he regards all Nordics outside German linguistic cultural group as either unconscious or renegade Teutons who must at all costs be brought into the German fold. To anyone who understands the scientific realities of race, the monstrous absurdity of these assumptions is inherently apparent. The fact that modern Germany, far from being purely Nordic, is mainly Alpine in race. Nordic blood preponderates only in the Northwest and is merely veneered over the rest of Germany, especially in the upper classes. While the Germania of Roman days was unquestionably a Nordic land, it has been computed that of the 70 million inhabitants of the German Empire only in 1914, only 9 million were purely Nordic in character. The displacement of the German Nordics since classic times is chiefly due to Germany's troubled history, especially to the horrible 30 Years' War, which virtually annihilated the Nordics of South Germany. This racial displacement has wrought correspondingly profound changes in the character of the German people. The truth of the matter is, of course, that the pan-Germans were thinking in terms of nationality instead of race, and that they were using – so the Germans were actually, in a sense, not making a white nationalist argument per se as we understand it, but making a German nationalist argument. Saying, okay, some Germans are Alpine, some Germans are Nordic, some Germans are Meds and Baltics. But we're Germans. Let's unite. Right? That was their argument. And he's attacking this. He's attacking it.
There's a reason why, like, this guy wasn't, you know, people, they don't like him or anything, but he's not, like, considered, like, a devil figure in America. He's also very obscure. But, like, you do get these
nerdy. He wasn't
nerdy,
in his day.
No, in his day, he was just fine. But
President Warren Harding actually praised him. Said his
Which
book
is,
was
that's sort of funny, right? Because you get these NRX types and these nerdy types that love to talk about how accepted he was in his day. And it's like, and these types that want to split every race into 16 parts. And like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, dude, fuck you.
It says here, the pan-Germans were thinking in terms of nationality instead of race. And they were using pseudo-racial arguments as camouflage for essentially political ends.
This is the father of the fucking argument you get. Don't be white. Be German nationalists. Be whatever your European ancestry is. Be Italian. Be German. Be British. You know what I mean? Like, in America, like, oh, you get this still. You get this still among certain types of paleocons. Usually they're older and irrelevant, or they're some kind of gay op or somebody trying to sow the seeds of doubt. I've seen it a few times when I've appeared places and so there's some weird commenter that's obsessed with the minutiae of race and is like, white doesn't mean anything. It's like, shut the fuck up. Just yeah. Shut up.
Well, this is actually, in a sense, like that argument.
No, this is the spiritual isn't real. Or direct father of that argument.
White, yeah.
White is isn't real. Like German and English
German
are
isn't,
real. Right.
No, he says
German isn't
German
real.
Isn't real.
German isn't real.
German isn't real.
Yeah.
The pity of that of it is that these arguments have had such disastrous repercussions in the genuine racial sphere. The late war was the late war not only exploded. Pan-Germanism is also discredited. Nordic race feeling, so unjustly confused by many persons with pan-German nationalistic propaganda. Such persons should remember that the overwhelming majority of Nordics live outside of Germany, mainly found in Scandinavia and, of course, the Anglo-Saxon countries. To let Teuton's propaganda gull us into thinking Germany as the Nordic fatherland is both a danger and an absurdity. So,
dude, there's a guy, I'm not going to name names, a guy I used to know early on in this thing. I actually like him, but he was a big fan of Lothrop Stoddard. And before I knew as much as I know now about the Nazis and Germany and the whole movement there, he used to pour all kinds of cold water on people that were Nazis and Nazi fans and Hitler fans and stuff like that by saying they, you know, their racial theories were kooky and weird and offbeat. And I didn't realize it. He was getting it from Lothrop Stoddard, whose racial theories are frankly far more kooky.
Yeah. Yeah. And
also,
yeah.
Like, not political. Like, this is not actually political. This is autism.
He's making the equivalent of Germans aren't white.
This is
in
autism.
His time.
This is autism.
Well, it's tactical autism.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't apply. You could make the argument that the United Kingdom isn't Nordic. There's
the United Kingdom has, like, roly poly, fat, short people in it, too.
Right.
Isn't that what the Alpine thing is?
They have people with brown hair, brown eyes. Probably
every
as much
European
as Germany
country
or more.
Has every kind of and white so, person. You can find tall blonde people in Spain.
Right,
you
right,
can find
right.
short brown haired people in Norway. Like
right.
every country has every type. Like get the fuck
right.
out of here.
Which is why this stuff is stupid. And the Germans actually, despite talking about Nordic theory, honestly, a lot of it based off of British and American race theories, which were the only race science happening in the world at the time. Mm-hmm. They initially kind of went along with it, but when they realized that, wait, these guys are this is just shit for you know Anglo political.
Yeah, it's just to blow fucking smoke up your own balls. It's like
right,
yeah,
right. Well, it's also geopolitical because it paints the Germans as Huns.
Yeah,
as barbaric. You know, oh, these are dangerous for racial reasons. You know, Germans are dangerous Alpines.
Benjamin Franklin said something, you know, he used to, because people love to go back and see racial statements from the founding fathers and such. He said something very similar. He said, like, you know, all white men can be welcome to come to America, of course, but these Germans are far too dark for our fair Anglo-Saxon race. You know, I was like, Germans are far too dark for you. It's yeah, like, what? There's no fucking difference. I mean, it's ridiculous, but you know, and people are like, right. We're German, and people are like, we're Germans. Are really dark skinned. You know, I'm like, no, he's
no,
just
not.
Being an asshole.
I've been just reading through. I have a ton of Lothrop Stoddard books. I own them from just back in the day.
Yeah.
And I was reading something that I think, you know, for Holocaust revisionists might be really interesting. Because remember, the Germans gave Lothrop Stoddard an open door. He interviewed Hitler.
Yeah.
As a journalist. He was working for a publication in America in an official capacity. He interviewed Goebbels. He interviewed Himmler. He interviewed Hitler. And he would often comment, like he would say, like he would make really, really catty comments. Even though it's generally a decent piece of journalism, he often, like in his memoir, like he went to an SS training facility. And he remarked, "Is like, oh, not all of these SS soldiers are particularly Nordic. The commanding officer of this unit is a short guy with brown eyes and brown hair. it really brings to question whether they're serious or not. You know, that kind of trolling. But there's an interesting interview with Himmler. Because one thing that Lothar Stoddard does throughout his book is clutch pearls over the Jews. That's another interesting thing about him, is that he spent the whole book clutching pearls over the inhumane treatment of Jews in Germany. Mind you, this is before any Holocaust lies or okay. Can you believe that?
Well, hold on. I want to read Benjamin Franklin's racial statement. This is,
I don't know, from, is that real? It strikes me as something that might be fake.
The swarthy Germans thing?
Yeah. That seems like something
I don't think
out
so,
of context
dude.
Or fake. He calls the Swedes swarthy, which is ridiculous.
I mean, that's what's funny. So you think it's a forgery? Because there's a lot of corroboration.
I think there's probably a context we're not getting if it's not a forgery. It sounds stupid. It sounds really dumb. You know, I don't know. People know that already, that quote. It's infamous.
I think it's funny as fuck.
But
people might not know it. I'm just saying. People might not know. Like, this is not actually, like, this is at least considered real by the mainstream. So he said it. There's really no way to get another context, but whatever. It's fine.
Well, in Into the Darkness, there's a part where he interviews Himmler. And he's grilling him on the treatment of the Jews. He says that the world is outraged at things like Kristallnacht and the official anti-Jewish sentiment in Germany, which is baffling, right? Mm-hmm. It's a baffling sentiment, considering that, at least on paper, the Germans were closer to putting Lothar Stoddard's theories into practice than, say, anyone in America was, and especially any Jew. And yet he's there... concern troll. The whole thing is a concern troll, and so this is very interesting.
He says they're not euthanizing enough people or something like that, right? Doesn't he?
He also said that the German euthanasia but sterilization program.
Oh, yeah, they didn't sterilize enough troglodytes or something.
He said that he didn't see a single person get sterilized, and he was really concerned about that because they had like people with really serious diseases and alcoholism, repeated criminals and stuff, and the courts are actually very reluctant. The Third Reich courts were very reluctant to sterilize people. It was only in extremely, like, egregious cases that they would do it. And this is also a program that did not last very long. But it was a controversial program, to be honest. And so Lothar Stoddard was complaining that, you know, he really wasn't complaining. He was like, he just neutrally commented on it. He's like, well, I didn't see anyone get sterilized.
Well, he was saying that there was like this one guy, this troglodyte that came in with this low brow and was really dumb. And he was like, I can't believe they didn't say to sterilize this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, Himmler responds when Stoddard asks him, he's like, what are you doing to the Jews? Are you hurting? Are you killing? Are you planning to deport the Jews? Are you going to hurt Jews? What's your policy on the Jews? Because everyone is saying, including me, that we're very concerned about the Jews in your country. And he goes, this is Himmler. That policy, replied Himmler, can best be expressed in the words of our Führer, to give lasting peace to our eastern borders. For centuries, that region and others in Eastern Europe have been chronically disturbed by jarring minorities, hopelessly mixed up with one another. What we are now trying to do is to separate these quarreling elements in just constructive fashion. We have voluntarily withdrawn our German minorities. This goes with Plan Ost bullshit. They actually were deliberately pulling back German minorities from Eastern Europe. It says, we have voluntarily withdrawn our German minorities from places like the Baltic states, and we shall do the same in northern Italy. We are even marking out a place for the Jews, where they may live quietly onto themselves. Between us and the Poles, we seek to fashion a proper racial boundary. Of course, we are going about it slowly. You can't move multitudes of people with their livestock and personal belongings like pawns on a chessboard, but that is the objective ultimate hope to attain. Himmler talked further about his resettlement policies. This is Stoddard now. Himmler talked further about his resettlement policies, carefully avoiding the tragic aspects that they involve. He then returned briefly to the subject of the SS. At that point, a smart – yeah. So anyway, that's just – so Lothar Stoddard –
talk about sterilization right here from Into the Darkness. Yeah. So it's like – he's got a lot of stuff where he says, like, the object of the statute set forth in his official title, an act for the prevention of hereditary diseased offspring. The grounds for sterilization are specifically enumerated. They are 1, congenital mental deficiency, 2, schizophrenia or split personality, 3, manic depressive insanity, 4, inherited epilepsy, 5, inherited Huntington's disease, 6, inherited blindness, 7, inherited deafness, any grave physical defect that has been inherited, chronic alcoholism when this has been scientifically determined to be symptomatic of psychological abnormality. So those are what they say they will sterilize people for. But then he goes, so then he says, Germany's Eugenic Supreme Court sits in an impressive building at Charlottenburg, one of Berlin's western suburbs. I arrived just as court was opening. On the bench sat a regular judge in cap and gown. At his right was a celebrated psychopathologist, Professor Zut, a typical savant with mild blue eyes and a Van Dyke beard. At the judge's left was a keen-eyed younger man who was a specialist in criminal psychology and beside whom I sat during the proceedings. All three courteously explained points to me at frequent intervals. Most was the meticulous care with which these cases had already been considered by the lower tribunals. The dossier of each case was voluminous, containing a complete life history of the subject, reports to specialists and clinics, and exhaustive researches into the subject's family history. In reaching its decision, the High Court not only consulted the records of the case, but also personally examined the living subjects themselves. The first case I saw looked like an excellent candidate for sterilization. A man in his mid-30s, he was rather ape-like in appearance, receding forehead, flat nose with flaring nostrils, thick lips, and a heavy prognathous jaw. Not vicious-looking, but gross and rather dull. His life history was mildly antisocial, several convictions for minor thefts, and one for a homosexual affair with another boy when a lad. Interesting. In early manhood, he had married a Jewess by whom he had 3 children, none of whom had showed up too well. That marriage had been dissolved under the Nuremberg laws. He was now seeking to marry a woman who had already been sterilized as a moron. The law forbids a non-sterilized individual to marry a sterilized person, so he was more than willing to be sterilized. The lower court recommended sterilization. I think he says, this is, goes on, I think he says, like, it's, they didn't sterilize the guy. Or they said, I think that they might have in this case. But yeah, so it's interesting, though, he described that they weren't like barbarians about this. He's very careful to say that, actually. Interesting.
Yeah. And well, and America had similar policies at this time, by the way, at least previously. So probably more applied, actually. America had eugenics that were more broadly applied than the Germans did. So whenever you hear a Catholic reactionary complain about German eugenics, be like, well, what about America? You know, like an AMNAT. What about American eugenics? They had it too, and it was more extreme than the German variant. The Germans had practiced what every industrialized society was starting to practice, and a lot of the eugenic principles were informed by shortages of resources. There was a fear that food was bound to be short. There'd be shortages of food and so on. And so they tried to essentially ration people. Like that's what it really was. So
in the case too, I don't want to read the whole thing, but it's clearly the person was more of like an eccentric, and Stothard was sort of offended by him personally, and they didn't sterilize him. He was just they say the guy, he had shabby clothes, yet he came in swinging a cane with a lot of swagger and was like really kind of, you know, he was like obviously just like an eccentric person. And not necessarily mentally ill. They didn't have any records that he was mentally ill or criminal or anything. He was just like probably kind of weird. And he wanted to get married. And the court was like, yeah, he's fine. Whatever. We don't care. And Sothern was like,
yeah.
Yeah. He's like mad.
But talk about useless autism.
I mean, this guy, just
to go defend Jews. He spends whining that the Germans are too nasty to the Jews, and then he turns around and is like, why aren't they sterilizing
like weirdos and eccentrics and just like kind of funny people, the guy who likes to wear shabby clothes and walk like he's an aristocrat, you know the probably slightly maybe a little off, but so what. It's funny because it's like the Germans actually took very careful care to make sure that
The dirty secret. Germans were infinitely more sensitive, ethical, and moral about the measures they had to take than any Jew or opponent. That's the dirty secret of the Nazis, is that they were actually the absolute pinnacle of moral and ethical well-being. Everything that they did was informed by, one, popular opinion, but also, two, carefully balancing different ethical dilemmas. This is something that America doesn't do and really hasn't really done in our lifetimes, and maybe since the Second World War, and possibly even before that. So, you know,
dude,
don't.
In other cases, it's just this girl was just stupid and they didn't sterilize her. They were like, well, she has a job where she's capable of being a waitress and making change.
Right.
So we're not going to sterilize her because there's nothing else. Like, she's just dumb.
Right.
She's kind of stupid. And again, he's like, what's with these German pussies?
Oh, the folly of German nationalism.
He's like, case four was a 17-year-old girl. The issue was feeble-mindedness. She looked feeble-minded as she sat below the bench, hunched in a chair with dull features and lackluster eyes. Left an orphan at an early age, she had haphazard upbringing, blah, blah, blah. And it says, the members of the High Court examined this poor waif carefully with kindly patience. She had no knowledge or interest in the most elementary of current events. But the psychologist discovered she was able to make change for customers in her restaurant, and she could perform other duties of her humble job. So the court concluded she should not be sterilized.
Right.
So, yeah. So there you go. Yeah, these brutal Nazis.
They balance compassion with you know, possibly social needs at the time. You know, that's the thing. Yeah. So,
well, that's the other thing. They probably were also like, I mean, part of it was, I mean, look, they probably wouldn't have sterilized her in any case. But also, like, look, there's no real reason if this girl can hold down a job. Like, why should she?
Right. That's something that eugenicists also miss, particularly in the American context, is that you have to look at these things as a necessary evil in some contexts.
Right.
But not actually, like, take pleasure in doing it.
Oh, yeah. No, Spurs, like, love it.
They love it for its own sake. They love the idea of doing it without the actual broader context. And that's kind of hard to explain sometimes to people that don't get it right away. But you have to understand that this is how the Nazis were not Spurgs. Lothrop Stoddard was one.
Oh, he was a total Spurg. This book is like autism, like,
and
autism
in order to feed his autism, he had to write garbage. Lies about how Jews were being persecuted in Germany. No, they weren't.
Why was the book called Into the Darkness?
It was a reference to the blackouts that were happening during the Allied bombing raids when he was there. It's not about, like, it's not a moral thing.
Okay, all right.
It's about, you know, because he talks about during the war, the British were bombing the cities and stuff, and there was blackouts and stuff. So,
yeah. Well, if you go to his Wikipedia page, I'm just sort of curious. So interesting. The funny thing is the description of him is not like it says. First of all, he was an American historian, journalist. Now they inserted conspiracy theorists, political scientists, white supremacist, and white. He's a white supremacist and white nationalist, but he wasn't a white nationalist.
No,
or a white supremacist. He's an Anglo supremacist. Stoddard wrote several books, they don't like him, but yeah, because he actually defended the Jews. They're going to go easier on him, which shows you a lot, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing. If you defend the Jews or your criticisms of them are really dumb, you can kind of survive. And sometimes I think these people do, because he's not a dumb guy. He was probably doing it on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
He was doing it on purpose. He was avoiding attacking Jews or writing affirmatively of German policies, because he wrote in his own time when Jews started to see, this is again, Lothrop Stoddard is a temperamental conservative, because when Jews were attacking him in the 20s for his books, he did respond privately in private letters that, oh, Jewish radicals own the media and they're attacking me because of it. So he knew the entire time.
Well, he knew something.
So. And his response is basically to go to Nazi Germany and complain that they're treating the Jews badly.
But listen to this. So Stoddard was taken aback by the forthrightness of the Nazis' anti-Jewish views, writing that in Nazi Germany, that the Jewish problem was regarded as soon to be settled by the physical elimination of the Jews themselves from the Third Reich. Stoddard quoted and criticized Himmler, telling him in his interview that the Nazis intended to expel the Jews from Germany. So not kill them, expel.
Expel.
So
give them their own state.
So here's a quote from the book. That policy, replied Himmler, can be expressed through the words of our Führer. To give lasting peace to our eastern borders, for centuries that region and others in Eastern Europe have been chronically disturbed by jarring minorities hopelessly mixed up with one another. We are now trying to do is separate these quarreling elements in just constructive fashion. We have voluntarily withdrawn our German minorities from places like the Baltic states, and we shall do the same in northern Italy. We are even marking out a place for the Jews where they may live quietly unto themselves. Between us and the Poles, we seek to fashion a proper racial boundary. Of course, we are going about it slowly. You can't move multitudes of people with their livestock and personal belongings like pawns on a chessboard. But that is the objective we ultimately hope to attain. Now, this is a document, and I believe Himmler said all of those things. I think that that is an absolute quote from what Himmler was saying to Lothar Stoddard. I don't think he changed that. That sounds exactly right to me of what they were doing. So is that gassing 6 million Jews? No. He even says we want to do it like in as nice a way as we can to give the Jews a place to live quietly among themselves.
Right.
And we want to work with the Poles to create a proper boundary. Of course, that includes like not giving up the lands that were stolen from us before. But, you know,
yeah. Well, here's the thing. The impetus for the Nazis is not imperialistic.
Yeah.
It's actually to create stability and peace in Eastern Europe. His point is that all these different minorities, Hungarians, Romanians, the Balkans, whatever, they're being mixed up by liberal allied powers, which is causing instability in Europe. And that was actually, if you read about the diplomacy, I actually wrote a college term paper on this.
It was on purpose.
I wrote a college term paper on this about German diplomacy towards the Balkans, including Hungary and Romania, where the Germans actually, it was like a 40-page paper, by the way. It's a very, very meticulous research document I wrote. And it was basically
republish it.
I don't know where it is. It's probably on one of my old computers. It's from like 12 years ago.
Email your professor. He probably doesn't
have it. Oh, yeah. Well, I got an A on it, although he did complain. He's like, you know, you sound a little – he was a Greek guy. So he was like
you're
more,
apologizing for these people.
He says, you know, after reading your paper, I think that – I thought that the Nazis deserve a Nobel Prize. He was half joking, but he wasn't –
You said it, not me.
He was half joking, but he gave me an A. He was a Greek guy, and Greek guys
so
generally.
So the research he couldn't complain. I mean, the A in college means the research is good. So
right. This is back when the school system was a little more serious, and also he was like a really rigorous academic.
Yeah,
and he said, you know, reading this, you know, I think that we should give them the Nobel Peace Prize because.
He just didn't say that in the earshot of any Jewish faculty.
No, he was talking to me alone about it. But anyway. The point is, though, is that the Nazis actually, the way they basically approach foreign policy.
You should have said, if you like this, read The American Jew, A Chronicle of His Career by another Greek.
Well, I used to talk to him about some stuff. He wasn't woke, but he was definitely on the right. And I told him basically in the paper I wrote that the German impetus for foreign policy was to divide nations around racial lines rather than or ethnic lines rather than under civic lines.
Yeah.
So the Germans would actually, you know, Hungary and Romania have tons of problems in their borders. So the Germans gave equitable resources and lands depending on the peoples living in them to Hungary. And then the same amount to Romania. And by the way, both Hungary and Romania were German allies during the war.
Yeah. And now lest you think now, first of all, you can't explain to me why separating nations racially and ethnically is morally inferior to separating them based on creedal values or something like that. In fact, I could give you a good reason why they're not. And on top of that, the liberal West acknowledges this problem themselves because of all the problems they were talking about in the Balkans in the 90s.
We know.
They were saying this was – and they used it. They've always used it.
Let me tell you. So the Germans carefully divided up the Balkans with all the players at the table. They carefully did it in a really rational, thoughtful way. But then when the war ended, the Allies completely upended all of these foreign policy achievements. And that's where we get the wars in the Balkans.
And they had been doing it before. That's why World War I started, because they were doing it before. It was their old – the policy of Bill Clinton in the 90s was the policy that led to World War I.
Right. Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson.
Same thing.
Colonel House.
Anyway, we got to go. It's getting a little late. I got to get this show out, so we're definitely going to go. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in to this episode. And we will see you next time. Andrew Joyce is going to be... I'm going to have an interview with him this week. We still have to work it out. He's a very busy man. So, yes. And see ya.